All right. Well, welcome, everybody, to the June 22nd, 2015 board meeting. It will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Mr. Elder?
Here.
Mr. Bochinski?
Here.
Mrs. Clark?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Buckle?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mrs. Hill?
Here. Thank you very much. Public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form. Those are the green forms as you enter the room. Limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask, in the interest of time, that you please forego making them. But please provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. We'd appreciate that. Personal complaints, criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Profanity, interruption, and/or interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting is not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate District 41 staff representative for a response, if a response is warranted. I know at the last meeting we were taking down any names and information that we might be following up on. We'll continue to do that. Is there anyone present who would like to address the board at this time?
Jeff Cooper?
Mr. Cooper. We are live streaming, so again, thank you for coming to the podium.
Thank you. We've got three items on the agenda for tonight, a couple which probably could be discussed after the meeting or at the end of the meeting if we had the ability to speak later, something that maybe during the course of this year, maybe we should take up again as a possible discussion in public. I guess that's four things with that. First on my agenda was TRS. It's up for other matters tonight, and I just wanted to just very simply say this is something that you guys really need to do. As board president, this is where you need to lead for your constituents and try to save them what I computed to be, if we do a 3-year compromise, about $1 million over the first 5 years once we go ahead and implement. It's not chicken food. That's real money that people in this district will save $1 million. Your neighbors, my neighbors, a lot of money. So we need to go ahead and we need to do that. Second is on the communication and the community engagement update tonight. It's really more of a comment for Dr. Gordon. The issue of trust. You want our trust. Real simply, to build trust on this particular item would be to walk away from Unicom or anything like that and not try to go ahead and swerve people in this district. To me, that would be a sign that there really is something solid to build out for down the road. And the last thing, I see the Triple I conference is being mentioned here again. I guess I'll go about it differently this year. Last year I asked a bunch of board members through emails if they were going to be going to any functions thrown by FGM, and the answers were really, there weren't that many answers. I guess some people on the board didn't feel that they needed to respond if they were doing that. My feeling is pretty simple. Anybody who goes to the Triple I conference is going there as a board member of District 41, not as a private citizen. Whether we are taking a day off of work or something is a personal matter. But if you're going to Triple I can't go there as a private citizen. Okay. If you're going to go there, I would like to know as a public citizen, a private citizen, that my board members are not partying it up or meeting essentially not hobnobbing, I guess is a good word, with a vendor of District 41. I'm not comfortable with that thought. It's something that really should be avoided. So consider that I'm asking publicly, and I know we're only in June, but I would like to know before Triple I comes up from each member of the board if they're planning on going to any functions that are thrown by FGM. I think that should be a matter of public record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Rapp.
Hi, I probably won't use all of my 3 minutes. I have two questions. One is, I'm going to ask you to bring back some sort of public participation, either in the middle after every agenda item or at the end of your business meetings. While I realize and respect that these are business meetings, those of us in the audience, while you're talking and discussing things, we have a lot of questions. And even if it's only 2 minutes each at the end, there's not many people left here at the very end of the night anyway. I think it's more efficient. Most of you probably already saw me and Mrs. Nelson going back and forth trying to arrange dates to meet to have questions answered. I'm just looking for efficiency so I can understand what you're doing. I appreciate that Dr. Gordon, Mrs. Nelson, Mrs. Clark, and Mr. Buckles have answered my emails to some extent, but I'd also like to get some of my questions on record. And when we have to wait 2 weeks, or in this case, 2 months till the next board meeting, I think some of that gets lost because it's not done in real time. Second thing, my real example that kind of ties into this is this academic review that I just picked up out there. I've been looking forward to this for months because, as most of you know, this is what I do for a living. I look at data like this, and I already have a lot of questions. It wasn't posted on your website on Friday, so I didn't have time to look at it over the weekend, and I just started looking at it now. And already I have questions bubbling up about some of these charts. So I would just appreciate at least some consideration about the bringing back the public participation at the end of the meeting.
Thank you.
I got an email from John Kenwood. He sent it to me and asked if I could read it tonight. It says, I can't attend tonight's meeting due to a conflict, but I would like my statement to the board read into the record during public participation. Can someone please do so? Thanks so much. So here's his statement. And this is John Kenwood, former D41 board member and president. It is my understanding the board will approve the bids for the 4 additional classrooms at Churchill this evening. I voted yes to move forward with this project and am glad to see it move forward. I'm asking the board to reconsider the point I made during the discussion on this vote and approve moving forward with the project, but make it 6 classrooms instead of 4. I am becoming more and more concerned that as the portable issue is resolved at the elementary schools, that a referendum for a new school or early childhood center, which I am against, will fail. Since full-day kindergarten has been identified as a must and a not if but when by the board and administration, this will leave Churchill as the only school that would not be able to provide full-day kindergarten if it became mandated without adding portables. The other schools were able to figure it out, albeit not very effectively, but Churchill stated they could not do it. Construction at Churchill will be going on for 2 years. The funds exist. Let's just get it done and not come back in a few years and disrupt the area again. With portables gone at the elementary schools, the board can focus on housing.
Thank you.
I have one more.
Okay.
I'm Rath.
Thanks. This is really last second. This was just sent to me. I will try to remove names where possible. This was a letter that was sent out from the teacher to parents. And it reads as follows. Spring math data was shared via Skyward. If you have any concerns over your child's math improvement, please email me. I did notice a trend with both my AM and PM students that some students level or time in geometry and measurements. I attribute that primarily to the math assessment being administered before we study those units. Your child was lower in the number of operations, math strand, or fractions. It could be due to their multiplication and division fact fluency. If the student is low progressing, 13 or below, in fact fluency, then it is difficult to solve multi-digit multiplication division problems, inequivalent fractions, and multi-step soy problems in those areas. Math data is to be a longitudinal data chart using a K-5 or K-8 model, with trending up as the goal. believe that is all. Yes, it is.
So just to clarify, Mr. Rath, this is an email that was sent to you from a teacher requesting to be read tonight?
This is from a teacher to another parent, which was forwarded to me to read.
Okay.
I got that same email. So
thank you. Thanks. All right, just as a quick follow-up, Mrs. Rath and I, we've been going back and forth trying to schedule a meeting together, and one of the responses was with her questions, trying to do something face-to-face, which I think is more efficient, so we'll work on that. I know the week of July 7th we were looking at, or 6th. And, yes, for Mr. Cooper, thank you for your request. And, in fact, in response to his question, there are receptions held the evening of the III conference, and invitations are sent out to board members, administrators, to attend those. It is a social function. All right, thank you. Anybody else, Nancy?
No.
Okay, thanks.
All right. A couple other pieces on for Mr. Cooper, the III. Last year, no board member or staff member attended an FGM event. Just to clarify your question earlier. So on a Saturday evening?
Last year?
Last year.
I stood corrected.
Yeah.
Because that was on Saturday?
Yeah,
when we were gone.
I also was able to meet with Karen, who presented 2 weeks ago. We had a very good conversation in my office last Tuesday at some time, so I appreciated that conversation as well. All right, with that, we're on to the...
Okay, presentations, reports, updates, and initiatives.
Tonight, Mike is going to be presenting the board highlights from his team's work around the technology security as it relates to the new content filter, the work his team did this past school year, the plans for the 2015 school year, professional development opportunities, and he'll give the board a look into the 2016-17 school year. With that, Mike, I'll hand it to you.
Correct. Just as Dr. Worden said, this will be kind of a review of the previous past year, plus kind of some plans that we have for the next year and 2 years, actually. So we'll pick up where we left off last year. The security updates that we put into place, starting with this past summer. Well, the biggest one was replacing our UTM. And what a UTM is a Universal Threat Management System. We replaced the old one, which was Sophos file, and we replaced that with Smoothwall. So the first thing we did is we implemented the content filter. So the internet content filter is what is that barrier between some of our students and some of the internet content. So that's the first thing we put in. We did that right away in the summer. That was ready to go when students came in the fall. And then that also provided us with much better reporting than we were getting previously. We get daily reports, executive summaries, as well as top 20 internet users or heavy traffic that we see from our users. We also put in place a separate server to handle the logging so we don't lose any of our logs, and also it helps with the efficiency and being able to draw reports and store them as well. So that the firewall portion of it, we didn't wind up replacing for later in the year, which also helped resolve some issues that we were having with the two playing well together. But once the entire solution was put in place, it's worked great for us. So it's been a nice addition. It's provided a good deal of security for us. The first year, whenever you put in a UTM like this, it takes some time to work out the kinks and also provide access to sites that may have been available before, but now we're blocked with the new content filter. So we've been working through those through the course of the year, and like I say, towards the end of the year, it's performed very well for us. We also put in a different system for unblocking websites. So as these requests come in to unblock websites, that actually goes through a process. Teachers fill out a form that we created in Google using Google Forms, has a corresponding spreadsheet, so all of these calls are logged. And the library media specialists, or the digital media specialists at Franklin and Hadley, would then review these as well as us. So we'd have a separate lens besides us just looking at these sites before we unblock it. Once the library media specialists gives approval, then we go ahead and we do our evaluation, and then we unblock it. We also changed all student passwords this year. So previously, at the grade schools, we were only using their birthday, so that wasn't terribly secure. We wound up changing that to a different structure, and that's also worked out well for us. We also had a risk assessment done, just kind of a network overview of our network. Those reports came back, and were actually pretty favorable. So out of 100, we got an 84, did you?
Yeah, I had a quick question on the unblocking the websites. So you've put that in process all year, right?
Right, that started at the very beginning.
And how's that been working? Do you feel like it's, you know, I guess the question I'm asking is, as you go through the process, are you finding that after you unblock it, you're not having any trouble with the websites, or do you have to go back sometimes and block them again?
Well, it's not having to go back and block them. It's getting them unblocked is generally okay. The biggest challenge, because a lot of these sites draw from other content servers.
Right, and that's the... That's a challenge.
Right, so that becomes a little bit more time-consuming than it had been in the past. But the process works well, you know. But, yeah, sometimes that can be a little cumbersome on writing some of those materials.
On the same topic, if I'm a teacher and I call in, how long does this process usually take to unblock a website if it is due?
We try to get it done within a couple of days. Obviously, we want the library media specialist to look at it first before we move forward on it. So our goal is to get it done within a couple of days, and we do ask for some advance notice, particularly since some of these sites can take a little bit of time to unblock all the content that's associated with it. And as far as the risk assessment goes, it did identify a few things that we needed to address, some older servers, some overutilized ports on our switching equipment. It's been very helpful in helping us to devise some other plans moving forward, not just this summer, but going into the year, things that we will address and we'll update and we'll correct, but no major issues with that either. So big events for 2014-15, this past school year, was first the Gmail migration, which is something we did about this time last year, as well as right after spring break. We transitioned all staff to Gmail, and that actually went fairly smooth. I mean, we haven't had a whole lot of issues with email or Gmail in general, and that transition, teachers and staff seem to take to it very well, and it's been very efficient for us because we've been able to take offline our old email server, so it's one less server we have to support. Chromebooks for 6th and 7th graders at Hadley. This was our first year adopting that platform, and that also went fairly well. It's been a pretty solid device, very efficient, very easy to use, and fairly durable. We also did a full one-to-one at Hadley this year. So 6th and 7th graders got the Chromebooks. 8th graders got the laptops that were on the last year of the lease that we were utilizing at the grade school. So everybody had their own device. The biggest change for us there was, rather than assigning devices to a program or to a teacher or to a classroom, we're now assigning devices to students. So students have that personal responsibility. That's their device. And we also obviously track that and store that in our database so we know who has what. So also a learning experience for us. That was a big departure for us. We hadn't done that in the past. And so as we go through, we're learning as we go. But that's been a fairly successful program for us this year. We also created Google accounts for all Hadley students. So students at Hadley no longer log into our domain here or log into our local servers. They really just log into their Google account. So that lowers our need to implement a lot of infrastructure to support all of that, as well as support concerns, and that has worked out very well for us. Google offers us way more storage than we can ever provide, plus an email service, as well as documents, spreadsheets, and a whole suite of production tools that come along with that, all of which are free to us as a school district.
Mike, does that also impact security from a different perspective?
Actually, it does. I mean, Chromebooks, there's a lot less emphasis on us to secure them because Google secures them. Mm-hmm. They're not as vulnerable as the PCs that we've been using in the past. And they don't, at this point at least, require any additional antivirus or malware protection. All of that's done behind the scenes. Google puts out those security updates on a very regular basis. On our end, we never even noticed that they came down. So it has worked out very well for us from a security standpoint as well as being able to manage them and deploy applications, other software and sites, local or centrally, so we don't have to get our hands on all these devices anymore. And the last big thing we kind accomplished this year is we survived PARC. First couple days were a little dodgy, but after that it went fairly smooth. And just like to say, our principals and our staff, our teachers did a great job in preparing our staff and teachers for that test, because that was not an easy chore. That was a very difficult application to work through, not very intuitive, and our teachers were ready at all the buildings. So the principals, all the administrators at the building did a great job preparing them, and they were really ready to hit the ground running when we do that test. So second round was hardly an event for us at all. I think all the years of math testing kind of paid off there. So everybody's kind of used to doing the online testing.
Hey, Mike, I had just one comment about sure. PARC. One of the things that I heard from teachers was because especially in the grade schools, they don't have one-on-one devices, so they've got to share them. And the teachers were having to spend a lot of time setting up with that to get ready. So I'm wondering if in the future we can maybe look at getting them some more assistance. Because the reality is they're teachers. They're not technology people. Sure. They spend a lot of time setting it up, and that's not a criticism of you. That's kind of an overarching theme that I heard from the teachers was we're having to get in the morning and set these up, and maybe we can, figure out a way to get them get them some more support.
Yeah, and it's a huge undertaking at the lower grade levels, just like math can be. At least in fourth and fifth grade, we do have one-to-one, but when you get to third grade, we don't, and that's where we kind of have to share and shuffle some of these devices around so we can get that one-to-one, but, that's definitely something that we can look at for next year.
Yeah, and again, not a criticism.
No,
we're 21st century. We've got 21st century desks. We could probably look at spending some money and make sure we get more devices.
For next year, we plan to roll out Google accounts to all level 3 students that's across the district. That we begin to continue to invest in the Google platform. Hadley students, we're going to start talking about allowing students the option to take their Chromebooks home in the evening. So that's something that Steve Dagley and I have been talking about through the year. We'll continue that conversation over the summer. And in the fall, we'll open that up to parents so we can start to get their feedback and kind of a question and answer information sharing kind of thing before we really implement that program. But we'd like to start getting to the point where our students can start taking these devices home. We also plan on a pilot for mobile technology for staff, for teachers. So next year, we're going to utilize the level 3 laptops from the Franklin School, and we're going to give those to the teachers at both Franklin and Hadley. It's about 200. So that should cover us for the teachers there. So those teachers will all have laptops, but these are laptops that we've had for a couple of years. They'll go off lease after next year. So this is kind of our pilot and our opportunity to learn well what works, what doesn't work, what can we refine, and then what's the best investment for the district in the future for teacher devices. We're also going to do Chromebook pilot at Franklin. So those laptops that we're going to replace or we're going to take away and give to the teachers, we're going to replace those with Chromebooks for the level 3s at Franklin. It's worked well at Hadley, but when you get to the grade school, it could be a different environment. So we want to see how that works, what the pitfalls may be, and how we can plan moving forward for the next year. We're also in the process now of starting to really shrink down our infrastructure, our servers infrastructure. We topped out at about 34 servers in this district. That doesn't include the smaller mission-critical ones that we use for our use, not for student use. So I anticipate getting rid of at least 10, maybe a dozen servers over the next year and not replacing those. And a big part of that is due to Google, and also most of the applications and the devices and tools that we get today are all web-based. They're all online. We don't need to house those resources internal. So it will save us a good deal on support, management, as well as the cost of refreshing those devices. Mm-hmm. We also plan to upgrade our internet bandwidth. Started that process at the end of this year. We're at about 250 meg right now. We plan to move up to a gig. Again, since we're leveraging the internet so heavily, we need to have the overhead for our internet bandwidth. Mm-hmm. And then professional development. At the beginning of last year, Christina Kellum provided some great PD at Hadley. a lot of Google immersion. It was a program that lasted several weeks to get our teachers up to speed on how to use Google. And that was a fairly successful program. Next year, this coming year, we're going to be implementing Google at the grade schools. So there's a couple different routes we're going to take for PD there. I've reached out to a couple of vendors that can provide certified Google trainers that will help us during some of the bigger opportunities for PD, but also utilizing our digital media specialists next year. So at Hadley and Franklin, those library positions are digital media specialists, so we're this year. Next year, all of our libraries will have a digital media specialist. So we plan on utilizing them and their talents to be able to help with PD, instructional lesson planning with technology, and using them to help us with teachers in the classroom. So each building will have somebody that can aid with that. And then looking ahead to 16-17, that's really when kind of the mother of all refresh is going to happen. And we have a lot of devices coming off the lease, about 2,280 devices in total. So with all of those coming off of lease, we're looking at our options to replace. And obviously, Chromebooks would be at the top of that list when we're looking to replace with student devices. I'm looking to provide a one-to-one from second to fifth at the grade schools, and obviously we already have one at Hadley. So it'd be kindergarten through eighth, or second grade rather, through eighth, would have a one-to-one. They'd have a Chromebook. And then at the kindergarten or first grade levels, we might look at tablets as being more of the primary device. And it might not be the only device, but it might be their primary device. But those are things that we'll talk about through the course of this coming year before we make any final decisions.
Mike, could they, on the tablet at the K-1 level, could they, like for, if they're taking Parker, MAP, can they do that on a tablet?
Yeah, they can. You know, it's possible.
Is that how you think you would envision them doing it, or?
Well, we haven't done Park, and kindergarten first, I don't believe they can take Park anyway. It would just be MAP.
Take
And with MAP, yes, they can. There's an app for that. There's also an app with Chromebooks for that, just like everything else, right? Then we also plan on, in 16-17, providing Google accounts for all students. So prior to that, it would be level 3s through 8. And then after that, all of our students will have Google accounts, right? And Google Drive and access to the Google apps. And the refresh for the teachers would also come that year. So I think we're at a point now where we need to look at mobile devices for our staff because they are mobile. Our teachers are mobile. And the cost associated with replacing all these devices would be less than what we're currently paying for less devices. So we're going to replace about 2,230 devices with over 2,800 devices for less money going with this platform. Obviously, we'll refresh the sixth grade Chromebooks every year. We'll do that. It's about 430 every year that we'll refresh. And we'll continue to reduce our servers. Ultimately, our plan is to virtualize a server environment. And that would basically shrink us down to two servers and just a big array of hard drives. And when I started here 13 years ago, we only started with two servers. So we're going full circle for me. So, any questions?
If you're going to Chromebooks for 2 to 5th, then it's only really 1 year you'd be refreshing for 6th, because there's different years, so it's not every year, it's just that year. But then the white buddies are 3 years, so 2nd will take it through 5th. You'll have a couple uneven years there when you're 4th and 5th.
Right, and I think at the grade schools, we'll have to look at whether or not we're going to assign those to students individually, or if we're going to just kind of continue with the same program we have. That decision really hasn't been made yet. And whether or not they would continue to use them, maybe, you know, from 5th grade or 4th grade all the way through junior high. You know, as things evolve, we'll see what the durability and the lifespan of those are.
Just a connection from D41 feeder into Glenbard West. I know not all of our kids go to Glenbard West, but the large percentage do. And I know when you started this, your technology plan a couple, 3 years ago, it was, to align as much as possible with that. So they're all Google Docs up there. I mean, everything that kids are doing with their classes, whether they're regular ed, AP, honors, is all opening up Google Docs and sharing documents and working together. So this is our children will be well prepared to make that switch into high school, which is a good thing.
Right, and my goal was really to have this environment be more hardware agnostic. What type of device you use is important, is the tools you're using with them and
right.
what you're doing with them.
Yeah.
We're getting towards that goal.
So we never get any internet.
Yeah.
Question. The digital, and this may be more direct than Paul to me, but the digital media specialist, mm-hmm. are we adding, the, I know it was said that we're going to have them at every library. Are we replacing librarians, or are they being added?
Transitioning into that role.
Okay.
So the current teacher librarians are working towards becoming that digital literacy specialist, and we continue to support them. Mike supports them. Lori and principals continue to support their transition into that role. Mm-hmm. Mike, thank you so much for your leadership, your yep. team's work. And I know the summertime is probably one of your most busiest times. So thank you. I appreciate your presentation tonight.
Vacation.
Yeah. Next, we'll have the academic update. Hopefully, everybody's comfortable. We've got 86 slides to walk through. But I'm really proud of the work that Karen's going to be presenting for us tonight. It's probably our most, not probably, it is our most comprehensive academic update that we've ever given. You'll be seeing, we'll use multiple assessment tools, MAP, Fontes Pinnell, Access. And Karen will be displaying the data through cohort and year-to-year data for the past 7 years. If you happen to be listening on live stream, you may download the academic presentation at the district website. Hover over the board button on the top of the home page. Scroll to agendas. It will take you to the board agenda page and click on the academic update link on the right-hand side of the page for the June 22nd board meeting. So you can follow along with us at home. With that, Karen, hand it over to you.
Thank you. My family is quite a deer from over here tonight. So as Paul mentioned, we do have a variety of data tonight. I've got quite a bit of notes, so I'll probably kind of be going back and forth just to kind of make sure I hit everything. Every time I look at the data, like, it's another question I have. So you may come up with questions even after tonight. Feel free to kind of contact me after you have a chance to kind of digest it and have an opportunity to really look at it and hear what people, how we're kind of responding to it and things like that. So this just kind of shows you the order in which we will cover it. As Paul mentioned, we do have a number of slides. So I think we kind of might try to chunk it a little bit if we can for questions, and then have you write it down, and I'll go through that in a few minutes. So we're actually presenting the MAP growth data in a slightly different way. NWA, this is all from them, but it just kind of gives you some background information, obviously the count, number of kids, the mean RIT, so that was it, average RIT. For those kids at that time of the year, it's fall and spring. The mean growth would be that change in their RIT score from the start to the end, so fall to spring. The mean projection is what NWA projected that group of kids to achieve with their RIT score. This percent of projection, we haven't kind of talked in those terms before. Essentially, what they've done is they've taken the mean growth score and divided it by what they were projected to achieve to get to this percent of projection. And when you look at the chart, you'll want 100%. That's what NWA says is average. So we want to try to always be at least 100%. Obviously, we would prefer to be above 100%. And then the last column is that percent that's meeting the projected. That's the percentage of our kids that met their individual projections.
Karen,
I was just going to say, for context, maybe you were from the same place.
I wanted to, as I was looking at this on Saturday night, I wanted to, it was a fun Saturday night. On the last one, percent meeting projection. So if I'm looking at this and it says 56, does that mean over 40% did not meet? Is that how I can interpret that?
Correct.
Okay.
So 56% of the kids met their growth target.
Okay.
So what the work
and 44 that in that case did not.
Did not.
Okay.
So what the work that occurs typically at the building level is they look to see where those kids that didn't meet their growth target, how far away were they from meeting their growth target.
Mm-hmm.
MWA says about 50% of your kids should meet their growth target. It's kind of, it was hard to find on the website. We found it kind of through a blog in that. So that's kind of the number I try to keep in mind in that final column.
That's according to their averages?
That's just what they say, is that they would want you to have at least 50%. I mean, obviously, the more kids that meet their growth target, the better. But we still always look at, from that individual perspective, how far away were they.
Now, I had a follow-up question regarding that. So as the kids, and I'm trying to understand, so the growth target is... Is that growth target the same for every child at every level, or does it change, or is it individualized? How does that growth projection occur?
So years ago, when we first started taking the MAP test before the 2011 norms, we had actually seen a wide variance in those growth targets. It's a little bit narrower now because really what they want is all kids to make at least a year's growth. So typically, the individual growth targets for kids won't vary that much by grade level. However, your outliers, kids who are below or above grade level, their growth targets may look a little different. Usually the higher your starting point in the RIT score, you may not have to grow as much. However, if you're at that lower end and there's a bigger discrepancy, you need to grow more than that projected growth target to kind of close that achievement gap. So they might have a larger growth.
It is a bit individualized at some levels. Is it that way all the way down? I mean, like as an example, is first grade individualized as well, or do they just have a number?
I mean, it's not that far off, and the principals probably have, as they look at it with their individual teachers, would probably know because they've done some goal setting with them in that, but... it may not vary a whole lot because you have more like learners at some of those grade levels than that. It was interesting, Gail Minkus and I were kind of talking through this, and we had one student whose MAP score was such an outlier, his projected growth was zero, because within the norming sample, there wasn't anybody else whose score was that high at that particular grade level. Well, I mean, obviously, we would have wanted... you know, more than not to have to show growth, but that because it connects back to the NWA's norms.
So, but I guess I'm still trying to. So, if I'm a first grade teacher and there's a fifth grade teacher, does the first grade teacher have an individualized goal, or is it the same number?
Her expected growth would be different than the fifth grade teacher.
But are all the kids in first grade? Are they individualized as well, or are they?
Yeah.
Okay, so different kids could meet different growth targets.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks, Kurt. Is there anything on this page, again, that needs some definition? What I was going to ask you for is just context for those who aren't familiar with NWEA and MAP, which is an assessment, not a test. It's a measure of academic progress. So an NWEA is what, just for context for the audience and for those listening?
Well, NWEA is Northwest Evaluation Association, who produces the measures of academic progress, which is the MAP test.
Right, and just that it's tied to national...
nationally normed.
Normed, exactly.
And RIT scores.
So that's
and
where
RIT scores. No, you better explain RIT scores, too.
Oh, and the RIT score, too. Yeah, yeah, thank you, Dean. Yep. RIT is a unit.
RIT is a unit, and it's an equal interval unit, so that a 190 is a 190, whether you're a first grader or a third grader. A 210 is a 210, no matter what grade you happen to be in. And that's why they usually don't project like grade equivalents. Over time, they've given us some indicators of what a typical third grader looks like at this time of the year, so we can kind of compare it to that too. And we are also, and NWA is going to start giving, providing the buildings with their local percentiles, so that they, as part of just the data that they get every year from NWA next year, because there will be new norms released to get next year from NWA as well.
Thank you. All right, we won't interrupt. You need to move forward.
Well, I just have one more question. Just because I'm trying to understand since we move forward. So the norm, percent of projection, which I'm not sure that I understand the usefulness of that necessarily, but that's not your question. So if that's 100, again, that's a norm that they see across the country. Is that
within their norming sample?
Okay, and then the 50 on the meeting projection is the number norm compared to all the kids that are in their system from all the districts across the state or the country or whatever they're doing. Okay.
And 100 is average.
That's the target on that percent median of projection right
okay.
there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So we're going to start with reading. And so there are a lot of slides. So I don't know, ideally what would be great is if maybe we get through the reading and then jot down your questions and come back to it.
Okay.
I know it's really hard, though, kind of in the moment, and probably trying to go back to a single page might take us a while, too. But we'll see what we can do. So basically, this is just our overall district just for this year, K-8. So some things that, as I started to look at the data, that you kind of want to look for, you want your actual mean growth to be greater than the projected growth. So you want this column to be slightly higher than that column. Again, percent of projection, you want above 100%. And above 50% here as well. I also like to look at over time, obviously where our kids are starting out in the fall is going to be greater. And even when we get to some where it shows the group of first graders over time, I would look for that as well. And same thing with our spring, that they kind of end there. You will notice that the higher up in the grades, the less you're projected to grow. Again, when you're starting out at those higher RIT levels, you don't need to grow as much to still make that adequate growth. And obviously, you need to make far more growth in the primary grade, as we would expect. So kind of overall here, our actual mean growth kind of outperformed our projected growth at every single grade level. We were above 100%. So, which is exactly what we would want to see as well. And again, these calculations came directly from NWA.
Can I ask a quick question? So just to make sure I understand before moving forward. So the mean growth and the projected growth, that's just an average of our whole district.
At
that grade level. So the projected mean growth is...
So NWA said this is what kindergartners, our average mean growth should be for our kindergarten students
right.
was 14.5, and their actual mean growth was 15.1.
Right. And then, so the percentage of projection, we were over 100 because we beat that projected. But however, I guess in my mind, those three columns seem kind of more like a national average, and it's not looking... an individual, not national average, district average. The last column, the percent meeting projection, I'm assuming that includes meeting or exceeding.
Correct.
We're not breaking out meeting and exceeding. So even though as a district we beat the projected mean growth, we exceeded that, and we were 15.1 instead of 14.5, only 56% of our students met their growth target.
Correct.
So, okay. So in my mind, that's an important number to consider because what percentage of our students are meeting their targets versus the whole average.
Right. And I like to kind of glance at that just to kind of see some, where we saw some, more of our kids meeting their growth target. And you'll see some, but for individual grade levels that really pop out, historically at certain grade levels as we go through it as well.
Well, and the older kids would probably be more reliable taking the maps, right? I mean, typically, than a six-year-old. If a six-year-old maybe could have, whatever he feels that day, right?
Our kids have been taking it over time, so their comfort level is pretty good there as well.
Last question.
Yeah,
last question. The the reading charts that we're about to see, and then the math ones, those include all the subcategories that, it's later in the presentation,
yeah.
But those are all included in it. This is everyone.
This is everybody.
Okay. It's everyone. And it's important to, it's everyone who took both fall and spring.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have a couple kids who moved in January, their scores were reflected. So they had just taken it both fall and spring. So again, there's not a lot on some of these slides. This is what we call a grade K cohort, but remember this was the first year we had all of our kindergartners take the test in the fall. So as you see on first grade, you're not going to see kind of a kindergarten. And again, you saw this on the other slide, kind of, you know, where our kids are at. And this includes dual. You'll see our dual data later, but this has our dual kids in it. Here's our grade one cohort. You also want to mention, too, that historically all of our kids take that test no matter what, even our ELL kids. And sometimes if they are brand new to the country, especially at the upper grades, we may not have them take it in the fall just because it's really not fair to them. They have no English and they have to be able to read that test. But predominantly almost all of our kids will take the test. So here's first grade. Again, you don't see the kindergarten data because not everybody took it in fall last year. So this is our first year. So moving forward, you'll always have that K starting for our cohort data. And again, you know, as you're starting to look at those end categories, and you might want to focus on whatever column kind of resonates with you the most, just to kind of see that there. So here's our grade two. And I better stay up. I know you're going to be struggling. So again, fall to spring, you will see this trend. We've seen it always over time. The test changes at second grade. And so they lose that auditory support. So historically, we always see a dip from our spring to fall. Dean, I heard you say summer slide. And as you look at the data over time, we don't often see summer slide with our math data. I think in our head, we kind of think we do. But as you look at averages, it really hasn't kind of stood out in that way. So you'll see that little dip there. They still make really good growth over time. Again, 61.5% of them met their projection. And just as I think it's important to people, so for these kids, this was their first year of teacher specialization. So I'll kind of point that out just to kind of, if that helps to kind of wrap your head around some of the data. So here's grade three. Again, from first to second, you see that little dip there, which has been consistent over time. Mean growth was higher than the projected growth. You will start to see when they start out a little bit higher, they're not projected to grow as much. Granted, this is cohort, so they're also in third grade. Again, for these kids, 2 years now of teacher specialization.
Karen, I know you told us percent median projection by NWEA is the target is around 50%.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you start data drilling a lot. Is there like a histogram that shows you where 60.5 is related naturally to above the 50% target, if that makes any sense?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 10.5 basis points, which is 2 basis points. How far out of the standard is that of 50%? You start really getting into some data drilling. So
right.
If you know right off your hand, like
no, I don't.
60.5, we're hitting 90% of the national average.
Good question. Gail's the one who's nice enough to kind of shoot that mathematician behind it all and hold it. But that I don't know. So Paul, did you write that
I
down?
I did. Or I got that.
Maybe jot that down just so that I can ask Gail.
Do we compare ourselves to surrounding districts or similar districts that also took the math? What their percent median projection is, not just.
We do. And
so do we have any data on that?
CIT looked at like districts, kind of, I think was that last year when we
saw
that. If you're doing that, you should probably look at the absolute score, not the percentage increase score, because if you're comparing to like districts, you want to make sure you're mapping, pun intended, but those beginning grit scores to your growth.
And we typically do kind of
look at our somehow
fall and spring.
That's getting pretty detailed, but I'm on Patrick's analysis of the percentage. I mean, if the norm out there of people taking naps, districts taking naps, is 82%, or it's, you know, in the 60s, that has a different meaning if the norm is 51%.
Yeah, and I don't know that they have that.
But it's two standard deviations away.
You're falling
then, then you're exceeding most of the people taking these tests.
So, but and like the GCC group, we do look at kind of fall and spring RIT scores kind of across districts when we meet and we, you know, kind of talk about that. And they use also kind of use what they call it like a growth index as well. So here's, and I hope I'm not blocking people, here's our fourth grade data. Again, from first to second, we see that dip that has remained pretty consistent over their 2 years of teacher specialization for these kids. This is their first year at multi-age. Again, I mean, you see that their actual growth is above their projected growth, their percent of projection. You know, as I was looking at the data, I kind of was at some grade levels, I would see somewhat of a pattern where it was low, high, low, high. I don't know necessarily what that means, but on some of the other charts, when you see kind of we were pre-Common Core, see some changes in the data. Here's our fifth grade. So we no longer have our first grade data on here again. This was a rough. We fell below 100% on that. We didn't meet our projected mean growth as an aggregate group there. So that's kind of just important to note. I should have mentioned this earlier. 11-12 was the math test changed. They introduced some Common Core. They had about 10% of their questions. And then in 12-13, they became 100% Common Core aligned, so their test had changed as well. So we knew that. This was also the time we had redone our curriculum, and we're rolling out new curriculum as well. So there's, I always kind of keep that in the back of my mind here. But that, you know, that was just kind of, we dipped below 100.
Karen, wasn't I think one of the things I always heard praises about you was that prior to Common Core, that you were kind of ahead of the curve with some of that in preparation. So weren't we already preparing for some of the Common Core before Common Core was actually introduced?
Well, we had done a lot of our curriculum through a curriculum review cycle. Science had been done previously, but we had redone literacy and math. And social studies, kind of those three areas, and then there were some other areas in that, and really kind of hit that balanced literacy framework in the workshop. But there were other districts that had been doing that for years, so, you know, I guess, gosh, it was great to think of it. We were ahead of the curve. I don't know, but when we started to see Common Core, we did realize we had some opportunities that we were going to have to do something a little different. So we did realign in both literacy and math. Obviously now we've got science and social studies.
Yeah, it's just been released, yeah.
So in this one, the fifth grade, is that 2 years then of specialization and multi-age?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And why is grade one not on here? We took all the data back 4 years. So
this, we just didn't put it on there.
Well, and that's pre-Common Core as well.
So it doesn't match up?
Well, I mean, you'll see the historical perspective of, like, all of the different grade level and things like that. So, maybe you could probably go back to the chart and figure out when they were in first grade, but trying to kind of keep it more. Prior to 2011 would have been pre-Common Core. These 2 years would have been before we implemented those structural changes with multi-age and teacher specialization. So it does exist. We just don't kind of, we just kind of kept it at the 4 years on these. So here is our sixth grade data. And I'm going to make sure I'm not missing anything. There is another new test in sixth grade. Sometimes we see a bit of a dip for the kids. If we go from the 2-5 test to the 6-plus test, not always, like here we really didn't see it. Again, you start to see that they're expected to grow a little bit less.
Karen, can you explain what you just said, the 2-5?
Yeah, the 6-plus assessment.
With the math assessment, there's the math for primary that our K-1 students take. There's the 2-5 assessment that our kids in 2nd through 5th grade take, and then there's the 6-plus version that our 6th or 8th graders take. So it's just, and we noticed that this year with some of our kids in AEC at 5th grade, they're kind of hitting the ceiling of the 2-5 test. They really need to have that opportunity to take the 6-plus to kind of show that growth for them.
And what is that 6-plus giving them? Is it giving them more questions to go beyond that
higher level questions, level? Too. Okay. So in math, like things with slopes and you know, some of those things. So. Okay. So again, kind of, I mean, this was, you know, for the our current 6th graders as 5th graders, kind of like kind of a good bump there. You know, anything significant here. Here's our 7th grade. Data. If you look back to when they were 4th graders in 11-12, they kind of were right at 100%. They didn't, you know, they just met their projected growth target. You know, here we actually, so like you see some growth here, so you're not necessarily seeing the summer slide. In this group, though, you did see that slight dip from 5th to 6th.
Grade 7 was not, they've not been touched by specialization or multi.
No, I guess so. Every teacher can.
Well, they're all in specialization.
No. Yeah. That's not what I mean. I mean those kids going through the grade
school. Correct, because they were
the
in 6th grade
and
13-14. So the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then here is our 8th grade data. So I kind of look at this because you'll see the same indicator in math as well. Like this was concerning, and I kind of looked at it. And however, so I kind of, my hypothesis was this group, this particular year, maybe had a rougher transition to Hadley for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know that they do, but when I look at it, because both math and literacy, they didn't do as well. But then look what happened their 7th grade year. They made some great growth. So I thought, well, maybe it was the transition. I mean, but they did make great growth, and they continue to grow. So it was just kind of interesting because that when I saw that had dropped down, I looked then at math. And so you'll see it again when we hit the math page as well.
Karen, can I ask a quick question before you move on from there?
Sure.
You've shared before that it's typical to see less growth, you just said it a few minutes ago, in the higher grade levels. So what does that tell us about growth as you're looking at it? Again, this is NWEA standards. It's this assessment that as children take it, as they answer more correctly, the questions ramp up, they get a little bit more challenging. And so it levels for the child, and that's where you see that push, as you've described it. So what does it say for us? I think you've given us a good description in this 6th to 7th grade that the learning is on some level developmental. It's absolutely, to Kurt's point, in terms of how differentiated it is. There might be a child who just doesn't meet their projected growth by a point, or a point, you know, it could be this very small, but because they're out of, again, you have to have your standards here. They don't, you know, hit the 67.2 or whatever it might be. So, what does it say to us for our district as we're seeing, you know, at the upper grade levels? Again, that tightening of the growth.
Well, I think for me, are they still continuing to make growth? And again, we're looking at big picture. Obviously, the data analysis that occurs at the building level is going to get down to that student level, which is
right.
Kind of the value in why we want to
look at the value
over time. it's hard, and I feel like the map has become very personal to our teachers because we've given it, we give it 3 times a year. They value it, but I know they get a little nervous and they feel bad when somebody just misses their growth target, or they had a great winter score and then they didn't make that growth target in the spring because they might have gone down in that. But again, it's still a point in time. And, you know, there's always a standard deviation within these, and they could take the test the next day and score within that standard deviation. So,
and there's obviously curriculum and learning that's happening as a result, obviously, and this is what they're being assessed on. So, again, it depends on that student's, that kind of snapshot, as you've described it, I guess. But it does give us, obviously, as a teacher, one of the things that, again, you talked about last year with this was that it allows the teacher, when they see at the building level, that need to go back and really drill down. So why might one grade level, you know, be doing a little bit better, and what can we learn from each other in terms of methodology, instruction, that type of thing? That's part of the value of the assessment and doing it 3 times a year as well.
Those are good PLT.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I was going to say, you know, using this as an example, we saw growth in grade 7, like a significant amount of percent meeting projection went up quite a bit, but then it declined for the following year for grade 8. And I know we're still, you said we want to be at 50%, but we're still above that. But are we evaluating, you know, why is there a decline in the percent meeting projection? Because, you know, as the kids get older and go up in grade, the expected growth, you know, that adjusts. So it adjusts for that grade. So you would expect that the same percentage would still be meeting. You know, what's happening that kids that were meeting their growth targets are no longer meeting them, since those adjust as they get older.
And those are the conversations that occur at the building level. I mean, when we put it all together district-wide, we don't know the kids, so that those are those conversations that would occur, especially at a PLC and at those teams, things like that. And I still go back to, okay, they didn't dip here. And when we look at that data on the next two slides, then you can see it's not cohort data, but how that grade level has done consistently.
At the building level, are they also looking at the percent that meets versus exceeds to evaluate those? Because I guess in my mind, I know I've heard a lot about it's hard for the kids on the end. They may have different growth targets than the kids in the middle. I think the kids in the middle is where they can really be pushed further. They may have higher growth targets. So are we evaluating them to see if they're just meeting them or exceeding them? At a building level, and I think it would be good to see that. I know I've asked you and Paul about this already, but I think it would be good to see that at a district level too, like not meeting, exceeding.
So
how those buckets fall.
Stephanie did ask for that data, and so Gail pulled the data. She just did it for a couple of grade levels, and I told Stephanie what I'd like to do is like meet with her and have her preview just those little samples to see if that's what. If it's going to answer kind of the questions you're looking for, just at those two grade levels, I mean, probably take about a week's worth of Gail's time to do that because NWA doesn't separate it. So she will just, I hate to use that word, manipulate the data, but you know what I mean by that, to kind of separate it out. And then if Stephanie felt like that is worthwhile information to share, then we'll have her go back and do that.
Well, I think that's the question. What's the relative value to the buildings? I mean, it's really the teachers who will be taking that information. And
you're looking, to me, if you're going to do that, you got to stretch the data out. I mean, because meets is one point. I mean, and everything else is beyond. So why just stop there? Why not say, are you one standard deviation above the meets? Are you two standard deviations?
But that's my point, Joe, is what's the relative value of...
Well, that's why I don't think the question... should be stopped there. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want you to go do a week's worth of work because it's just one point in time of the test. But more importantly, what all you're asking is this, the meets is one point, right? Bam. So there could be 50 kids on there, there could be five, and then everything else is above it. So your question to me, if you're asking for meets and then above, is just ask every question along the way. Ask every data point. Because you're asking for one data point.
But you don't know what we've struggled just to get that.
I guess I'm just thinking.
No, I'm confused by that question, though, because if you do what you're doing on a number line, you're asking for 1 point meets. Right? If I was at 203 and I was supposed to get a 209, right? Give me the people
that
hit 204.
That's how they break it out, though.
Right. So
that's the same.
But then the question, for me, that's... I understand the question, but don't you just really want every data point then? Aren't you asking for every data point?
No, well, I guess I don't want to get too complicated right now. I just think I know Mary was saying, like, at a building level, they do look, or maybe at a teacher or classroom level, they look to see our kids not meeting, or exceeding, and they use that information to determine what they're doing. I'm just asking, is there value to look at that at a district level as well? If we're trying to determine, you know, if we're growing, should we be looking at a district level? I'm not trying to. We don't have to get into the nitty gritty.
Joe, go ahead, and then I want to be able to get back to Karen so she can go.
Too, but I guess my question is the building level looking at just meets and exceeds, or are they looking at meets and then levels of exceed? They have to be looking at all that. I mean, you're looking at the child's data. Yeah. You're not looking at is it meets or is it exceeds. You're just looking at the data. Yeah.
We're looking at individual children and where they have, where they've grown. So we can look at a child and see that they were in the 70th percentile 1 year and then the 85th percentile the next year. And so we do look at individual levels of performance of kids.
Mm-hmm. And we look at who's meeting their growth targets and who's not. And we try to hypothesize why are they or why aren't they. For some kids, they take a test after they've been on a vacation for a week. So... it could be something like that. We tried to, or maybe they just were sick. So, we try to take it down to the individual kid.
I guess the point Stephanie's probably trying to make here is that it's great that the buildings are looking at this, but for me, you guys are making the decision on how we deliver the instruction, right? I mean, the specialization multi-age, for example, was not driven organically from the ground up. It was probably from the top down. You guys should be seeing this data, analyzing it, because you're the ones that have to make a decision whether we stay on course, switch course, make adjustments. And if that's not occurring, that's a concern for you. You guys need to be seeing the big picture. You made a statement a few minutes ago, Karen, that you weren't quite sure why something was happening. It's part of what you do. You've got to try and figure it out. We can look at reasons. It's been a thing that Stephanie and I have talked about for a number of times with what we're doing with the science experiment. I'm not sure you guys can figure out with what you've implemented, and now we're going to have an extra half hour a day, how anybody can start to drill down and figure out what's going on with somebody, what's not going on with somebody. You've made your point. Please don't interrupt me with that. So,
just to round this out, I mean, the point of looking at the district data, as Karen is showing us, is to see this, as we requested, high level. And we have to keep reminding ourselves, this is aligned back to a validated instrument, and it's a national norm, right? So it's their direction to us to say, here's where you are. But the really, and actually I think, Kurt, this is part of your point, the real value is going back to the school so that when Mary's meeting with her teachers at K-1 and level 2 and level 3, that really genuine conversation between teacher and teacher about student and student is happening so that you can figure out how do we help them grow. That's why MAP assessments were selected in the first place, as I recall from 3 or 4 years ago, right? So I just want to clarify that, because I think, Kurt, you're tracking toward that in terms of what's the value, but it really is about that one-to-one communication at the school level.
But do the teachers have the ability, and I want to get off course, but the teachers, do they feel, and at this point, have we asked them? We took a whole year, didn't ask them what they felt in terms of, they can talk one-on-one and they can talk to the PLCs, but in the end, they're powerless to make change. So, you know, that's and that, you know, so they can do what they can do as boots on the ground, but the high level decisions that are made by management. And so you guys should, it's just my thought process, you guys should absolutely be involved in what's going on with that, and the building should be bringing that data to you, and you guys should be having conversations, you know, that way as well. But that's just my opinion.
But to go back to, so we have a couple sample grades where we did separate the meets and exceeds, and I'm going to meet with Stephanie in July, kind of show her that, and then if it kind of answers some of those questions, then, you know, we can move forward with that. So I just kind of want to mention that too. We just included a couple of these. If you remember, the first time you saw the box and whiskers mm-hmm. was at a previous data update, and the box and whiskers plot is just kind of a nice visual way to really look at things. It's fall to spring, so this is their fifth grade data, their fourth grade, and then their third grade data. Just a quick refresher, right within here, the 50th percent here is that median score. These are kids at the 25th percentile and then the 75th percentile. The whiskers out here is 1.5 times the box. So you usually kind of see a little stair step there. These are individual kids. They're outliers. And the X then is the NWA norm. And so our kids at the 25th percentile are above the 50th percentile for NWA. So it's just kind of, we just included a couple of like 5th and 8th grade just because to include all of them would have been an even longer presentation. So just kind of just, we did look at all the data in this way. But
so Karen, if since you said a norm, the X on there is NWA. So if we were absolutely average, would you see those black lines be at the X?
Yes.
And so what this is showing is we're above those in all cases.
Well, yeah.
We'll
just write
into
there.
But above our median.
One of my questions was going to be, why aren't we seeing the other grade levels? But
you know what? We've got all that data, so I can share it with you. It's just...
She wanted to get a sample.
We chose to kind of present some of the other information kind of based on feedback we've gotten about what people wanted to see. So, but
we can get these slides. Great.
And then here was April.
Karen, is the boxes, is this different from the information that you're getting for Stephanie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So to Kurt's point, you could give Kurt all the boxes for all the grade levels.
Yes, all grade levels.
So if you could do that.
So this is, at eighth grade here, this is nice to see kind of that narrow band. The band was a little bit narrow. That means look at all those kids who are really kind of between the 25th and the 50th. And then the 50th percentile to the 75th there in reading. I think in math it's actually higher. More kids are performing above the 15th percentile.
And those kids, again, because they're grade 8, would not have been impacted by socialization, multi-age. It was up through.
Right. So if you go back to this one then, Kurt, for these kids, this was the first year mm-hmm. of introducing that in reading, and then their second year. And that would be both, because it's reading, the multi-age, and the teacher socialization.
Karen, one other quick point. I know you pointed this out when you first showed us this last in January, I think it was, or February. But those little those points or those dots, those represent one student. Correct. So again, as we see them increasing, so those children that were more in fall of 2014, there's fewer in 2015. That means they've moved up into.
They may not be the same kid.
It might not be the same kid though.
Correct.
And that was the other thing because remember we have mobility, we have kids right. come in and out, we have, you know, there's other aspects there, and that's why. The time in the buildings with the teachers is...
Right, and they're looking at that because these are your kids in your RTI process and that. And there's a little bit more than one, you know, there's a little small cluster here. But, you know, hopefully by the end of the year there's fewer, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing that I noticed, if you go to the 8th grade cohort in this, that I noticed about these is, I mean, it shows that, you know, we're going up steadily every year, which I guess we kind of typically expect that, you know, kids' scores are going to go up every year. But I want to be careful about just people looking at this and thinking, oh, look, we're growing. Because on the grade 8 cohort from the spring of 2014 to the spring of 2015, it looks like we're steadily going up. But if you look at our the RIT growth, it's back on page 14, there was actually a decline in the percent use projection. So, which to me is, you know, cause for concern, like, why is there a decline? You know, what are we, what's happening in the district that less kids are meeting the projection? Even though this looks like we're growing, there was a change. So.
But you're kind of looking at two different kinds of data. Because this really isn't about the percent that are meeting their projection. These are the kids who are at the 75th percentile. So it's not kind of looking at the data in the same way. Because these kids could be anywhere in here, but they may not have met their growth, their projected growth target. But they're still...
Right. Well, I guess I was just saying, I mean, if we look at this for grade 8 cohort, you may say, oh, look, we're going up. It's a little deceiving to me. It seems like everything's steadily going up, but when you look back at the detail, the percent meeting projection, if you look overall, we actually declined in the district. So that's just...
Yeah, and this isn't showing you the percent that met the projection.
Right.
All right. Do all the boxes through all that time period kind of look the same way in terms of the X and the box being above it?
Fairly similar. And I mean, you can kind of, you know, you want always the fall to be slightly higher as you kind of look at those kids over time. And you want to make sure fall to spring that it does go up a little bit.
Can I ask that a different way, Karen, possibly? When you look at all this data, is there any box and whisker grade scores that you felt important enough to bring to the board that it was out of the ordinary?
No, not really. No. I mean, we just kind of picked those two transition years of fifth and eighth grade. So nothing really had stood out. I mean,
nothing so egregious as the NWEA was on the other side of the box.
No.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay.
And we do have the report from when you presented it over at Hadley of all the grade levels, all listed in a box and whisker format, so we can see.
And we've updated those.
Right.
With the spring data.
Right. Okay.
So the next set of slides, we're still in reading. This is year to year of the same grade level. And so it's not cohort. I always have to keep reminding myself it's not cohort in that. A couple things to keep in mind. 10-11 was the first year for Common Core math assessments. And remember, that was first year. Just some introduced 11-12. I'm going to check on that. On the next slide, I will. The other thing, we just put it on here. It'll have a difference is the norms are changing for NWA next year. Their last norms were released in 2011. The preliminary ones that we saw, we did notice that it looked like reading, the NWA norms are going slightly down, except at first grade for whatever reason, but in math, the norms are going up slightly. So we may see a difference in our data because of that, but we won't know until next year.
Karen, this was a question that I had sent to you over the weekend. So what does that mean, going up slightly? You know, they renorm it based on the number of children that are taking the assessment, or...
And who's now taking the assessment,
okay.
All of that information.
So demographics, all those things are taken into account.
Right. So at first grade, let's say, you know, let's the 168.2, it could say that, you know, that they want, you know, that average thing should be like 170 or something. It may impact us. I mean, we have to kind of wait and see where we're at, but again, we'll kind of monitor it.
It's based on those different criteria.
Correct.
I got it. Okay.
When Gail Meekins and I were talking today, she expressed a little bit of concern as we were kind of talking about the math data, and that NWA has huge samples within their norming. And so whenever you're like between the 25th and the 75th percentile, that norming sample is great. But as you start to get to our outliers, and when you see that in like our ELL data or special ed math data, their norming sample isn't as large. And so it's just kind of important to remember that it's not as a fair an assessment of those particular kids. But anyway, so this is our first grade data historically from 2008 to 14-15. So Stephanie, you had asked earlier, you know, kind of prior to that, and we didn't have it on those charts. So this is not the same group of kids. This is just first grade over time. Blue will always be pre-Common Core math assessment. The first year, they introduced some Common Core questions, Common Core aligned, and then kind of just the last 2 years here. Trying to, you know, what I, if I were, so this is data historically we haven't looked at kind of from the district level. Teachers and PLCs would want to look at data from this way, and I believe they do every year, like kind of how their kids did. I would think that first grade teachers and every grade level you'll see, they would will always love if their kids are starting out higher in the fall and they end higher in the spring. So, you know, I kind of looked at that. Remember, these are not the same kids, but just over time, are our kids, same thing, looking at their growth. So pre-Common Core, you'll see a dip, which is what we would have expected here. But and you can kind of just look at this, too. You can kind of watch our data for 13, 14, and this is kind of across the board. I'm generalizing here. Even through 8th grade, we saw a pop at every, like this number was large at every single grade level. So it's just, you know, kind of interesting to note, because I thought no matter what was happening at 2nd through 5th with teacher specialization, we saw it even at 6th, 7th, and 8th, it's at 1st grade as well. So again, this would be great conversations as a PLC. What did we do? And this is where you start to look at the data that you get from NWA around the standards, kind of that geometry strand. That's the conversations PLCs have of how they're doing things like that. So again, second grade data over time, pre-Common Core. You see the dip that occurred when you know the test shifted. I see again here this 13, 14, it kind of popped, and then it's not as high in 14, 15. And I've noticed that trend, and I don't, you know, I haven't come up with that. Why did that happen? Here, what's interesting though, the percent of projection, this group started out with a lower, you know, mean grid here, fall mean grid. There was their growth, they were expected to grow, so they had a you know, their actual mean growth was higher, which put that projection up, even though that score, starting score was a little lower. So it's just kind of, those are the questions I kind of start to ask.
So the question is, some of the questions are, and it's been brought up already, so what was different that year? These are not the same children. So I always ask the question, what's the value of looking this, not from a non-cohort basis, because it's not all the same kids, but what changed that year? Some instructional changes, kids being more used to Common Core, because that change is embedded. Some of those other things. So that, I'm assuming that's what the teachers are talking about.
Right. I would almost care. Before you go down that path, maybe you ask the descent of people that created this normalization. Did they change something on their side? Did they see? Are we seeing the same talk that somebody else in the entire district, and they say, yeah, you are, because the reason is you changed this value in the normalization database, and everybody probably saw that.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that might be as simple as that versus trying to rack our brains up. Did we do something every district? Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing, in 13-14, that was the first year where we pulled them by grade level teams to do district level planning at 2nd through 5th grade. We pulled the K-1 this year. They did a little bit the first year. And so, you know, a question I had to myself was, well, was it because as a district they deconstructed the standard, had those conversations, and we saw a path? Then it carried through Hadley, and they didn't do those. So, you know,
yeah, make sure you're comparing apples to apples, you know. System didn't change.
Right. Those are just questions you keep having.
Karen, I'm going to...
These were 2 years of teacher specialization here.
Karen, just a quick time check. We're at about 5 to 9. No, just for your end. And for board members, too, we're starting to, I think, ask some good questions, but maybe around some of the same things. So, you know, as we go into this, if you have a question, as Karen said, let's write it down, because we're going to obviously come back to this.
Okay, so we're still on. So again, this is concerning that happened this year. Again, not a cohort group, but they saw that. This, though, because I mean, we're in reading. Actually, when I talked about that trend, it was more in math. But they had a good percentage of them met. I'll go a little bit faster then, because I will just probably keep talking. So fourth grade, this would have been 2 years of specialization, and then they would have 1 year of multi-age. So, again, met their growth target, you know, good number there, but slightly less than the percent meeting the projection. Fifth grade, here they had 2 years. Again, not the same kids. This is like teachers taught 2 years specialized in multi-age for these kids. So they would have moved with their kids, their fourth graders, into fifth grade. So a good percentage of the kids met their growth targets and some good growth there. Sixth grade, this is kind of over time. This is that group again this year that with that sixth grade that, you know, but then they saw some good growth the next year. Here's our seventh grade data. They also had some really good growth in the 13-14 school year.
That was that sixth grade that didn't do that well the year before. That's the sixth grade that didn't do well the year before.
And then our eighth grade. Again, here's your 11, 12. And this was the tip we were concerned about as the test was changing and moving towards the Common Core. Again, good in the 13-14. Nothing changed there or whatever. So this is just to kind of show you the averages. I won't spend a lot of time on it. This is pre-Common Core. And so this was weighted to reflect, obviously, over 1,000 kids here. These are the 2 years before anything new had occurred with specialization or multi-age. And then this is the last 2 years. And we really just kind of, it's an average. So you can kind of look at those columns of projected, the actual growth, the percent of the projection, and then the percent meeting the projection. So this is the second grade.
Karen, that page is not, that page is at the supplement we got tonight.
Yes.
That wasn't part of what we got on.
Yes.
Right.
So the next one, 2, 3, 4 pages,
right? Yeah, it's great. We just did 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Thanks.
Reading and then in that is 2. So here, that was grade 2, grade 3, pre-Common Core, 2 years prior to anything changing in this. So these kids only with teacher specialization. Again, you know, here we drop below 100% prior to those first 2 years. Good growth, and again, it's average growth. Fourth grade, pre-Common Core, before we did anything, and then these kids had multi-age for 1 year and teacher specialization for 2 years. The averages are trending up. Again, they're averages.
But a lot of those, the 13-14 through 14-15, there was a big bump in 13-14, and then most of the scores actually dropped in 14-15. So
these are averages.
You know, yeah. The average but that's, is high, yeah. But
it's just another way of looking at the data.
But you said trending up, and they
well, as an average, they've gone up here.
But within year to year, they've
been. Year to year,
right. That we've gone over on those previous slides. And here's fifth grade, which is pre-Common Core, those 2 years, and these kids would have 2 years of multi-age and teacher specialization.
We're also looking at that count just really quickly. The count is the number of children taking the test, so that
correct.
Also you know, it impacts the numbers as well, too. Thank you.
Here's our Founders and Canal data. I won't spend as much time on that. Kindergarten, so the green bars are above grade level, red is at, and then blue is below. When kids start out in kindergarten, nobody can be below. They're all pre-A.
Yep.
But then they may start out, some of our kids will be reading, and then this is kind of where they finished in the spring. Remember with Fountas and Pinnell, the benchmark changes mid-year and end of the year. They should be further along, grading at a higher level. So when the expectation raises, they need to be reading at a level D. Here's the percent of kids who will not have a level D by the end of the year in kindergarten. So here's your first grade. If you look at it, here they were as kindergartners. Here they are as first graders. You want to see the blue bar get smaller, and you like to see the green bar get bigger because more kids are reading above grade level. Here's your second grade cohort, again, K, 1, and 2. So the blue bar gets smaller, the green bar gets bigger. Your third grade, you work backwards from third, second, and first. Then you kind of see that trend. This is, as I'm kind of going through this is a conversation we're starting to have, especially at fifth grade, if they've looped with their kids. What I said is I wouldn't re-give them the Fountas and Pinnell in the fall. You knew where they ended in the spring. Save that time. The teachers are always looking for things to kind of take off their plate. We do a lot of assessment. Kind of start where you knew where they were at. If they need a little support, give it to them. But because I would want them to go take them back if they didn't have to. With that support, I think kids could kind of hit the ground running or pick up where they left off. So again, kind of just watch how those expand. And then I'm afraid.
Did we see, prior to, and maybe I'm missing this in here, I apologize if I did, I'm going through all this, we'll just leave this tonight, but do we, like when you talk about trend levels that you're seeing, let's say at third grade, has that been that way for years?
I probably go back and look. With Fountas and Pinnell, it's a little subjective. You have a different person every year administering the assessment. So those are just some variables you kind of always want to kind of take into consideration.
But those variables remain constant each year,
over
right?
Time,
so
correct.
Yeah. So so you're not sure as we've done Fountas and Pinnell over time, you see that trend data as you're saying you're seeing growth at like third grade. Did we always see that kind of growth years prior?
When they changed their end of year benchmarks, we saw a dip, and that's because we didn't have as many kids like a kindergarten. I remember when I started, our end of year benchmark was B, and teachers said to me, I can't get into a B. And we got to step it up. It was only kindergarten. And now that's a D. So they're getting many of their kids to where they need to be. So when those change, it kind of impacts us a little bit, but for the most part, we've been pretty consistent in where our kids end up. I'd have to go back and look exactly at that data.
Could we just get the Fountas and Pinnell name for next time? The Fountas and Pinnell data at a district level year to year, like over time, like you did for the map. You did the map by cohort, and then you did it over time, like grade one for the past 7 years, however many years, grade two. Could,
yeah, got it.
And that's what you're asking for is not a cohort group. It's first grade, second grade,
right,
third
like
grade,
first grade, like typical
year to year.
Like, year to year by grade over time.
Like the last group of years, where they started each year, where they ended each year.
So here's our district map, map data. Again, actual mean growth is over projected mean growth. We want to be above 100% there. And then that's our percent median projection. Kindergarten, there's kind of our starting point. I won't spend a lot of time on these. Our first grade data this year was great. And when you see, they had really awesome data last year on the math assessment. You'll see it on that grade level chart. But that would remain a little over 71%. That's great. Here they were, that first graders the year before, with that 84%, which was which was great. So here's our the math grid for the grade 2 cohort. This is second grade, and that is first grade. Again, you see that slight dip from spring to fall. The test changes.
Because the test changes, it's the 2 through 5 assessment at that point.
Correct.
Got it.
But they lose kind of the auditory.
That's right.
So here's our third grade cohort data. First grade, you just saw that little dip there. It didn't continue there, so no summer slide. For these 2 years of teacher specialization, this is that pattern I was talking about in 13 and 14 we saw across the board, which, 74% of it, only 75% of them met. Said Patrick brought up the question for that scene and those are questions we can ask other districts too if they saw it, because although you don't see it here, that big pop at 13, 14. But I think at the other grade levels you will see that. So again, the dip here, which remains consistent, and they actually did dip again, some summer slide there as well, kind of maintained it here as a group. And then here's our fifth grade cohort. Again, here's that pop at 13, 14. Again, I said, we did that district planning. They moved to building-based planning. Was there an advantage of having that conversation with more of their colleagues? And I don't know. I mean, those are just kind of questions that I ask myself.
Right, but those are the right questions to be asking.
Yeah. Here's our grade six. Again, kind of over time. The dip again here as the test changes. We saw that as well. They had some good growth at sixth grade. One thing in math, too, is I started Mr. Dively start looking at the data, and I know the math specialists there, they had made a change this year. The sixth graders, the vast majority, had an extra. They had a 45-minute math period and then a 45-minute like extension of math. And so it's something that at 6th, 7th, and 8th grade that we'll kind of want to monitor because of the changes at 7th and 8th, too. So here, they made good growth kind of thing. So at 7th grade, they have 15 minutes less of math instruction. So this is something that I kind of want to just watch and make sure. I mean, a lot of kids are still meeting in that. But it's something just to kind of be aware of and to have those conversations because I worry about that. So we'll see. And, we'll talk to Mr. Dizing. He's having those conversations with his math department as well. And so at 8th grade, this is the first year where they've got they lost that 15 minutes. So their data is still strong. Here's that grade 6 data that they dipped in both literacy and math. But then, as 7th graders, kind of did well. Again, the Box and Whispers plot just for 2 grade levels, 5th and 8th. We've got that data for all of the grade levels. We can show you again, here above the mean, the outliers at the low end of FUM have moved up, same at the top end as well. Good growth there. And here's our 8th graders. What I noticed on here is this would show that more kids are working between the 50th and 75th percentile and fewer kids from the 50th to the 25th. So that's good. You want to make sure all kids are making growth. Here's those year-to-year comparisons. So grade 1. Pre-Common Core, and then here's just kind of the introduction of the question. Totally Common Core aligned. So just kind of a slight little dip there. Remember, these are not the same kids. This is just like first grade teachers would look at this data over time and kind of have those conversations. So the group started out at 170, a little bit lower here, but finished fairly close. So I mean, that would be, you know, something that as a group you would talk about, have those conversations.
There's a big difference in numbers. You have 316 in that one year and then 367.
Right.
Two. Yeah.
So here's your grade two, pre-common four. Teacher specialization is 2 years. There's that little bit of a trend of a pop that first year. They hung in there. This is where the group kind of dipped there with 100% common core line. Here's your third grade data. So 2 years, teachers were specializing there. Again, first year was higher than the second year. Kids started out lower there, which is interesting.
Have we begun any analyzation of why there's that dip?
This year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I like to say it was a nice pop. I mean, it was a good bump in that. But that'll be, I mean, like, teachers haven't seen the data yet. Bill, this is, I mean, Mary and Kirk are here. This is the first they've actually seen the data as well. So that'll be kind of that next step. I know teachers like to see their building data, but it's always interesting to see kind of from a district perspective as well. So we'll look at that. Here's grade four. Again, just teacher specialization. Grade five, teacher specialization in the bottom two. People are getting this glazed over.
Can you go back to grade five real quick?
Grade five.
No, when I looked at this, we're specializing, we're multi-aging, we should be hitting the ball out of the ballpark.
This math is just specialization.
Okay, so when I look at 2011 and I look at percent needing, and then I look at 14-15, numbers speak for themselves to me.
I'll ask the question. Is that part of the Common Core? I know we've talked about the shift to that in terms of some of the rigor. I know teachers talked about that too.
Well, I'm looking at 11-12, which is coming out of Common Core. I guess for
right.
me,
well, that was the first shift.
That's some of the stuff that sums it up.
That I look at though is, our kids are starting out at a higher fall RIT score every year, and they're ending at a higher RIT score in the spring. And it's not a cohort.
But we were paying a lot of attention on the LIT side to the percent meeting projection. Now, when it's maybe not working in our favor, we're looking at other numbers.
I think that's an assumption.
I'm just trying to understand.
Yeah. I wrote the same note down, though, because you're at 110% in the second to last column. It's been lower than the most. But at the same time, I went back to the other slides, and I looked at your absolute value on your ending score, and it's at 233.7. And those scores, every point matters because you're at a mean score. And that one is significantly above relative to the other. So it's interesting. They did start a lot higher. It seems that fifth grade did in 2014-15. They started at 224.9.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you look, that was your point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it was 222, and then 224.
Right. But to the point, you still want your kids to meet, and you want more than me. It's an interesting slide because that is significantly higher start point than any of the other previous slides.
Right. But so when I do see that, I do try to go back and look to see, gosh, were we low there as well? I mean, just trying to kind of put all of the data pieces together. And again, here's where I was like, okay, we did a lot of planning and deconstructing the standards district-wide. We didn't, but...
And I don't know if that means anything. Right, and I know certain people don't want to hear this, but maybe the point is specialization only, as you said. the other one, the specialization and multi-age in the reading.
Right.
So that's one factor that's missing here is that you're not multi-aging, and maybe you would get a better pop if you were multi-aging it, and that maybe you wouldn't, but it's just...
We're going to move on.
But I think that's part of the conversation for the teachers to have. That's your point, is to put, give the data to them.
So here's the sixth grade, and again, look at, see, they've got a good percent of projection there as well. Right, you kind of follow them kind of over time. They're starting out higher here. They started out lower there, though, than they were that year before. But they made, you know, as an average mean, they made some really good growth, which kind of pushed that up. They still started out higher here, mm-hmm. and they ended higher. So I kind of still want to go back to that. And sometimes it's good to look at pre-Common Core. Are we kind of recovering back from where we were pre-Common Core? It's moving ahead. Mm-hmm. So for seventh grade, again, I was even starting to look for patterns. It was higher, lower, and then, you know, you kind of got to go back to that data. Didn't end as high as they did the year before with the seventh grade. Oops, and then here's our eighth grade. So again, that was a great number that we saw there for them. Still started out higher here and ended higher. So just one of those things to kind of think about. And then here's the averages again, which you can see where we want to write down those for dual language. Kind of pre-Common Core, 2 years prior to doing anything, and then here would have been specialization. Again, it's an average. So we have it in here. At third grade, you see a larger group, but again, it's an average. It's those last 2 years average, so it may not be as meaningful to you. Remains constant with a percent median, but our other number vary at fourth grade. And then same with our fifth grade data. Their average is lower these last 2 years from the percent median of projection. But their percent of projection was pretty much the same. This remained constant as well. And it's slightly a little bit higher there. So now we've got some program data. So we're kind of totally switching gears. And one of the things that we might want to do is think about, if, you know, in the fall or sometime over the course of next year, kind of relook at program data in a way connected to the program, like more background information than a snapshot. So important thing to keep in mind whenever we're comparing the dual language program to the rest of the district, you've got this tiny sample of kids and you're comparing them to close to 300 kids in that. But this is really, you know, kind of answering that question, how much do the students grow between the fall and spring of their math test? So the blue bars are math, the red bars are reading, and here these are our Spanish-speaking kids. These kind of separated out. These are our non-Spanish-speaking kids, so whose first language is English in the program. And you can see kind of their fall to spring written up. This is only the dual kids in kindergarten, and then here is their first grade data.
So are we comparing the blue bar to the blue bar and the red bar to the red bar?
Yes. Well, I hate to even compare, to say compare, just because, I mean, these kids are first learning English here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, English is not their first language. So their language levels are low, and they're first learning. So, but it just kind of gives you a snapshot of kind of where they're at. Math is in instruction occurs in Spanish. And they get instruction in literacy in both English and Spanish.
And math is in English.
Math is in English.
Okay. Karen, what's the number of kids in our dual language program?
Okay. I definitely was doing it. Our year, dual kindergarten had 25 Spanish students and 21 English students. And then at first grade, a total of 17 Spanish and 22 English. We had a smaller original cohort with our first year. 14,
right, but it just gives us what you're saying is it gives you perspective. Yeah. It is a really small field.
So it's like 17 kids, you know, that was the growth for those kids.
Okay.
Can you go back? Just you said they were taking a MAP test
in English.
Both the English in the reading and the literacy and the
correct.
Right. Just a quick question, Tom. So this chart is. The data that we're plotting here, back to all the other charts where it was just in a spreadsheet, it's the actual mean growth that you're plotting out there?
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Okay. That was my question for Karen. For a dual language program, there are dual language assessments, right? So we're assessing Spanish first language, Spanish speakers in English.
Correct.
With a MAP assessment. So
and we always did, even when they were in bilingual.
Right, right.
And they do have an assessment that looks at both their Spanish literacy and then just their literacy. They were in the district numbers as well.
All right. We won't interrupt you. Go.
And there's some other, we use the 50-50 model, which not all districts do, and that was intentional from the research we had done where they, 50% of their day is in Spanish and 50% is in English. And that's important to remember. So here's the fall to spring MAP growth for kindergarten. So here's your dual language kids. Here was the rest of the district. And then here's the, and we also kind of did a comparison to NWA just to kind of see how they're doing. And remember, kindergarten, low English proficiency levels.
Okay.
And again, then you've got your first grade down here, our dual language, again, small sample, the rest of the district, and then kind of compared to the NWA. They're slightly higher here than NWA. And again, their instruction at both K and 1 in math is in Spanish, in math, and then they click when they're taking the test in English, which is pretty good.
Karen, this is just a logistical question, but of the non-English speakers, are they all Hispanic? Or?
Yes, they're all Spanish speaking.
Okay.
And then here is, did they meet that projected growth? Again, dual language and compared to the district, and these are in percentages for both. This is as a group, and here's where it's separated out by the dual kids, this is the dual Spanish kids, the dual non-Spanish speaking, and the district. So,
when you say non-Spanish, that's
the English kids.
First language English, yeah.
First, yeah. So, kind of not surprising why the reading sometimes might be higher is because as they're learning the language, sometimes they can kind of pick up quite a bit and they start making that growth early. This is good to know since it's occurring in Spanish, the instruction. And some might say, you know, math, you know, symbols and numbers are a little bit more universal. And then here's the first grade. Kind of data. Remember, small numbers compared to a large. So dual combined with, and then the rest of the district. And then here is at first grade our dual kids who are Spanish speaking, English speaking, and the rest of the district. And here we see that pop in literacy for first grade for the kids in the program.
Mm-hmm.
So, Katie shares this data and kind of the other data with her dual families every year, continues to kind of gather it. Again, they do assess literacy in both English and in Spanish for our kids. And the 50-50 model will carry them through. So this just kind of gives you just some general information about the FLAS assessment plan. So they're using something called the SOPA, Student Oral Proficiency Assessment. They've worked with the Center of Applied Linguistics, which is CAL, in kind of getting that up and running. And they also administer a district writing assessment to all of their to all of the kids who are in FLAS. These are summative assessments. It occurs at the end of the year. I'm not going to read that to you. You can read it. And then this is kind of that assessment plan from that analysis perspective. So last year, obviously the kids started out with nothing. They took their end of the year, kind of that was their baseline assessment. So each year, they kind of pilot that assessment. They then meet back as a team, kind of talk about make adjustments for the second year. And then this year, they piloted grade two assessment and administered the grade one. So in collaboration with CAL, Katie will work with them to kind of establish that appropriate growth model. So how many of our kids are given the model we use, which is the 30 minutes a day, CAL will help establish what are those numbers for kids kind of meeting, they're on, you know, they're kind of meeting that projected growth around that, and who aren't meeting those kinds of things. The FLES teachers do formative assessments. They, you know, get grades on the report card as well. One change we had to make is the first year, CAL recommends a two-person team. The SOPA is administered one-on-one, so they had a two-person team give this oral assessment. It's like a performance-based assessment. Well, this year they weren't able to partner up, so they did it on their own with a rubric, and then next year they'll actually do it like through almost like in a workshop model where they pull individual kids, like an individual conference to kind of gather that data. Writing can be administered. So after this summer, probably through in July, early August, they'll work on kind of putting that data together to establish that first year of data to show kind of how our kids grew from first to second grade. And then we'll be able to kind of keep that on track. St. Charles and Northbrook came and visited the program and have been meeting with Katie. They still are not kind of sharing their results, and they're kind of interested in what we're going to be able to share kind of over time.
Karen, can I just had a question. So I guess for me, more so than necessarily the assessment, because this program's going to end up costing us quite a bit of money, but how is FLES helping our students overall in the big picture, and how do we measure that?
Well, we'll measure kind of their proficiency in Spanish, and projected long term, we anticipate our kids really being able to enter West kind of at AP level, Spanish 3-4, they may choose to take another language. There's other research out there that we have looked at when we're kind of just looking at programs in general, that kids who learn a language at an earlier age, it has positive impact just in general on their academics. Not that different than playing an instrument. There's research that, you know, that shows that kids playing instruments, they kind of do better in school as well. So, you know, over time, will we see a change? I mean, you pointed out before, there's always a number of variables kind of in everything we do. I mean, a variable for us sometimes is, you know, kid comes to school crying, we give them the math test, and it probably wasn't the best day to do it, and they don't do as well. So there's some variables we can control, others we can't. But I think in everything we do in education, it's hard to say it's because of this one thing, because we don't have control groups where we withhold things from kids in education.
Yeah, I guess for me, we're going to end up spending $750,000. I'd just like to see, at some point, we have to be accountable to the people paying the bill, and we have to be able to tell them, this is what, I mean, we institute something, we have to be able to tell them, here's why we did it, and here's what we think by eighth grade. I'm not really concerned that they can,
you know, be it whatever Spanish level it was. But how is that making them a better learner while they're in our system when you're spending that kind of money? So that for me is, that's how I think. And you know, so those are some of the questions, you know, as we go into the future, into the budget, that I'll be asking more about. So.
Well, it sounds like this is the, we piloted, and now we'll have that data for the next year, and so now it's going to roll up. And we're establishing that criteria with Cal at this point.
And our hope, too, is that our kids are biliterate, not just bilingual, that they can read and write in Spanish as well. As Stephen, and Karen's here, the foreign language teacher, she knows kind of what that kind of looks like and feels like. And but we will kind of, we'll monitor it over time. We'll have that kind of data.
I just wanted to ask for the data, the piloted assessments. When will we see that data? Will that data ever be presented?
Yeah. So that's the first to second grade data is that she'll go kind of like almost calibrating it with Cal this summer, and then this is kind of that data that hopefully, you know, maybe in the fall when we kind of talk, we can kind of do an update just on the programs or share highlights of the program. We can include kind of that data and maybe have it be more relevant. So here's our ELL kids, and I want to preface it with, the math is not the best test for these kids who have limited English proficiency. For some of these kids, they're new to the country, and then they sit down and take this test, and it's in English. What it does give us, though, is for individual kids, we kind of see where they start, and we can monitor kind of their growth over time. Like Katie and I, we just kind of sat down and talked about the data, because this is not where you see that trend of their actual growth is greater than their projected growth. The important thing to keep in mind is, though, this is their projected growth kind of based on this group of kids, but NWA doesn't have norms on an ELL subgroup. It's the larger growing population that we're using. So kind of take it. You know, this we were worried, we're really worried about. So we got lots of questions, you know, that we'll kind of continue to explore. Some things, you know, you always have higher numbers here, and they go down. Possibly here, some of them could be new to the country, so their language level is going to be at the lower levels. They may struggle a little bit more. They could be dually identified with a disability. There's just lots of factors. So
your
sample size is smaller. Their math data is better. Some, they actually exceeded their projected growth target, which is great to see.
Karen, when we have our counts at 78, 62, 91, et cetera, going down, I had asked you this question. Our children are moving out of ELL?
Correct.
Right, which is the goal.
Right, that is the goal.
Right.
And this is really how they track kids' progress. Our ELL students is through the access data. 2015 data has not beneficially released yet, but this is our district performance. This is what the state says our target is. And so those are the number of kids making progress. In other words, they're gaining the English language that they need and then attaining that proficiency where we can say that they no longer need the services. And then for 2015, we know that that's 21.2. Again, the actual results haven't been released.
So the ELL and the math data we just saw is just a snapshot of this year, every grade. But shouldn't we also be looking at that over time, kind of like we did, you know, for the whole district, to see if there's trends, you know, in first grade, have things changed much, you know?
And we can pull, I mean, typically we don't, just because the math test is not the best test that we want to use for them, but
or somehow quantify, like over time, like year to year, a difference.
And a lot of times, once they're they no longer need the ESL services, they kind of reach that level. I mean, it takes 5 to 7 years to gain proficiency in.
What does it say here? In 5 to 7 years to gain proficiency.
To gain true proficiency, yeah. Which is a long time.
For our first language Spanish students. Yeah.
Where English is not their first language.
They don't have to necessarily be Spanish.
No, it could
no
be
you're right. Yeah, it could be any language, right? Yeah, we do.
So, pre-K, this has been, I mean, we talk about it, and we had Gail pull the data, and it was, you know, she just pulled some reading data and that. And our pre-K, remember, it's also early childhood, which are kids who have identified disabilities, tuition-based kids, and then the blended program has our at-risk kids, early childhood, and tuition kids within that program and that. And they use a very specific assessment program as the teaching strategy goals, 38 indicators, some of those things, and it looks at that developmental zone for which kids are and are they actually making progress, and then how they report that out to parents and that. There are a number of variables with our pre-K data. First of all, we typically identify the most at-risk kids. Some kids are in the program for 2 weeks and they get part of this group. Others might be in for 2 years, some kind of 2 months. So if they've attended, they're kind of lumped into that. And Eric had asked a question, like, is there a point in time? And the reading data where we saw the achievement gap close was by third grade, which wouldn't be that atypical. I think when, you know, if you would go back and look at some of that ELL data at kindergarten, you can kind of see the impact of our at-risk kids that, you know, have. Kids who are at risk, the two main qualifiers is income level of the family and a second language. So kind of some of the same kids. So we'll continue to kind of try to extrapolate that different data and kind of look at it. We are doing work with the teachers. We just did 3 days of some curriculum work with them, aligning to the Illinois Learning Standards and training on some.
And Karen, those are our 80 children in the pre-K program. Is that correct? The number of children in the pre-K program is 80. Right. And it's just as a quick reminder, this is a lot of years ago now, but I think it was 6 years ago when the state pulled our funding for pre-K, correct? Uh-huh. And I remember a really conscious conversation from the board with you and the principals, too, about the value of keeping the program, even though we would pick up all the cost of it. Right. And so.
So, again, special ed, the most important thing for our kids is really their IEP, which has the goals. Our kids really making progress towards meeting their goals, and that's monitored. Throughout the year, it's updated annually. This is what's very important to parents, but it's also important to us that we continue to meet their needs, academic, social, emotional, and we still want to close that achievement gap. So from a specialized parent, we really want to pay attention to the goals. Again, we've got a small number of students. The other thing to keep in mind here is this reading. This would be any student with an IEP, so it might be a resource student, could be a self-contained student, it could be just a speech only as well. But as you look kind of where their projected growth is, again, these are the norms for everybody, but these kids are kind of flagged in the system, so this is their projected growth, kind of based on where they were starting. And then are they meeting or exceeding their growth target? So, you know, Michelle, again, is starting to look at this data. The buildings will look at that data. We're meeting with a group of Hadley teachers who are going to be providing some interventions yesterday, or today, and tomorrow, again, to kind of look at how to meet the needs of the kids, what's the data, points they want, and how they're going to work with them. Again, here's their math data. And again, not as many kids have a math IEP, but if they have an IEP, they're in this group as well. So you just kind of look for, you know, here you saw some really good growth with those kids and look at it over time. More of them that are there as well. And so these are our kids who are on free reduced lunch. They financial struggles in that, and so we just kind of look to see again the numbers, the number of students who are eligible has doubled, I think, since 2010. Mm-hmm. We said so. Mm-hmm. Again, those numbers are increasing at the district level. Poverty, though, is a huge indicator of kids, how they perform in school, which is why we do this, kind of giving that advantage. So, you know, buildings will kind of look at this data. It's good for some of these kids may also be in our ELL data as well. So they're kind of represented twice. But again, you kind of start to look at some of those same trends, and are we closing the gap or kind of making more progress than we needed to. And here's your math data as well.
Karen, do we know, you may not know this, but maybe you could get it to me. Do we know in the dual language program at Churchill, do we know how many kids are on free and reduced lunch that are English speakers and then those that are not English speakers?
Yeah,
actually,
I don't know it off the top of my head, but we would be able to.
Okay, I'd be curious if you could get that.
Well, we know at Churchill that our direct certified, so they don't have to fill out any forms. The state of Illinois directly certifies them in free reduced lunch. We have that population, and that's I think part of the doubling. But at Churchill, I think we were at 47%, which is why we hit the federal poverty right. And then I know it was last year that we then had the conversation about providing breakfast at Hadley, even though Mr. Dively came that night. We weren't at that number yet. Remember that mm-hmm. conversation that we know that those numbers are naturally increasing, and so the decision was made to provide that. And I checked in with him actually right before school ended about that process. He said one of the collateral benefits is that as these children come in earlier, they have a place to go, they're getting food. And many students actually are buying lunch just because they want to have, breakfast just because they want to have breakfast. So, this population, and just as an FYI, today in the Daily Herald is starting, I think, a four-part series, and it's titled, the very first article today is about low poverty, low socioeconomic equals lower scores. And it was just a really timely article to read as we were coming into our conversation tonight, because DuPage County looks very different than it did 4 years ago.
And that's part of why we want to close the achievement gap.
Right.
Yeah, we can get that data. And my guess is that students, the English-speaking students, look very different than the
English-speaking
students.
So. Well, this is another one. You know, because this is talking about the achievement gap, it's a big group. We need to be examining. I feel like we need to look at overall trends, you know, for the past several years to kind of see if there's been changes over time when we implemented changes. It would be nice to see that.
And you know what the LL subgroup team has done that with their staff, and they put in some common, this is for you just watch, common assessments to kind of make sure that they're making progress. It usually is towards that language proficiency, but a lot of those kids are kind of in the same thing. But if we can modestly kind of get a little bit better than that, yeah. And so this does not have as much data. A couple of reasons. These are the kids who were flagged. So third grade, we kind of preliminarily identified kids in January of this year, so they weren't flagged in the system until at the end of spring. So their data is not represented in here. Typically, this count grows between fourth and fifth grade. Again, they're flagged, but the normative population is the general norms, not just for kids who are participating in the enrichment program. Hadley data is not on here, and it's something that we'll talk to Gail about. Hadley has gifted literacy and math, and so we didn't include it because if they have a gifted flag, they could be in either or. So we felt like math data, which is all we have here, would not have been reflected. So we'll kind of do some work and maybe separate that to try to pull it as well for the AEC kit. And then again, here's our projected date for the data next year. We should have PARC in October. So hopefully we will. Wow, sorry. I know people are starting to look a little gray.
That's right.
But again, you've asked for some other questions. We can kind of pull that and get that to you. And then I'm going to be meeting with Stephanie on those other things. And then we'll probably have other questions as we start to look at it. And then an opportunity to go back and get data and kind of over time.
Karen, very quickly, the pull together for all of this is this data goes back to teachers and then what and the buildings, what happens at that point? Because that's really my interest is what's done with this.
Well, I think what happens at the building level is probably different from our perspective. Like Team 21 will look at the data in the fall, kind of have those conversations. You know, what does it mean for that? I think, you know, you kind of put it as one piece of the puzzle and you put it with all of the other information as far as what we feel is working, what, we just had our administrative retreat and we kind of read an article and they talked about, you know, how you view change. Is it growth or is it change? And, you know, we keep talking about it's been a lot of change and hopefully we're growing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily mean growing numbers, but just growing. And what we're doing. So,
but it really gets pulled apart at the building level.
It gets pulled apart there. It gets pulled apart with the administrators reviewing the data. Karen, the cabinet team going back and reviewing it, having conversations on multiple levels. Where are we at? What are we seeing? We were able to put the last pieces in on Friday afternoon, so now we need even more time over the summer to really review it, understand it at a deeper level, get it in the hands of our principals. As Karen indicated earlier, this is their first blush as well. And then as we continue to work with, as they work with their BLTs and their schools, what does this mean for the district, but then at their school level?
I guess one thing I wanted to ask about the update. I know PARC assessment, you don't get those scores until the fall.
That'll be until
October. But looking for next year, when we take the map in April, and just thinking that, wondering if the update could be sooner than the end of June. We have a lot of stuff that gets thrown into June. And that way, if you're going to make any adjustments or anything to the next school year, depending on the data, it could be done sooner. It just seems like the end of June is late, and there's already a lot packed into the last June meeting.
Well, and from a teacher's perspective, they would want to know something before May.
Yeah.
If we were making any changes, I wouldn't. Well, Karen.
The crowd is dribbling.
You know, for them, you know, they would probably like to know before, because even though, you know, once we get all the April data in, it's usually not till May where they can kind of pull it after we close the window and that. But you know, we can still kind of do the
look at that piece
to kind of move that up. But I think teachers would prefer to know what might change for the following year sooner than it's
Well, I mean, I guess I think if we're taking the test, then they know the MAP scores immediately after they take them. If you can do it soon enough to make adjustments if necessary, it makes sense. Otherwise, if the update in June or give it in October, it really doesn't matter because you're already, nothing. You can't change anything moving forward. I guess in my mind.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's I mean, for me, this meeting now, I mean, to Mrs. Rath's point about the way we do public participation, you know, anybody here could not make a comment publicly until August now. So, you know,
there's a lot of other ways people can communicate those
to your point.
I hear what you're saying. We're not talking about public comment right now, though. if there's questions, I really encourage.
Is that not a fact, though, that someone that would maybe have want to make a statement on public record about this cannot do it until August? Is that true or not?
August 10th, that's correct.
That's right.
But if there are questions from the public, that can be sent to Dr. Gordon, to Mrs. Carlson, so that there can be that conversation. And that's in part why I wanted to meet with Jennifer face-to-face, is so that you can have a more timely conversation. So I welcome that. Make sure you put your questions in writing. It's they'll be answered. Yeah. Karen, thank you very much.
I have one thing. I didn't know if I could take a couple of minutes to just show. I wanted to look at some of the data. It's a chart I put together. It just took the data that Karen put together and put it in a chart. I actually drew for you guys before how I'd like to see it in a chart, and I had a couple I wanted to see if I could just show you quickly.
None of us have seen it. Could you send it to us and... Could we look at it that way and have some conversation?
Some of the stuff.
I just literally took the data that was in here and I just threw it up on a chart. That's all it is. I didn't make anything up. I took the data from the growth over time and plotted it out on a chart. That's all I did. And then growth over time for reading and for math.
Can we get a hard copy of it too?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. 2 minutes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Mike, would you throw that up for me quick? Super quick. In my mind, the way I'm thinking about this is we're looking, the map data is used for.
Do you have hard copies?
I only have a couple.
You know what, Stephanie, what would be really good is just give us the philosophy of what you're doing.
Give me 1 second. In my mind, the map data, it serves a couple of purposes. One, the principals and the teachers use it in the school to figure out what kids are meeting their goals, exceeding them, not meeting them, to determine what interventions they need to do at the classroom level. Is there a way to move that up, Mike? My part of the bottom is missing. Thank you. But at a district level, I mean, what is the point in looking at all this? I mean, we're trying to see how we're performing as a district. We've made some overall changes to the district, and one of the things that we're trying to do is evaluate how those changes are going, how are things going. And so if you look at this chart, this is reading percent median projection over time by grade level. You can see all the grades. And I guess in my mind, they're just looking at this, it's kind of a jumbled bunch of lines, and I'll send this to the whole board, but in my mind it just kind of shows we're kind of up and down, we're kind of steady, nothing is really like, I haven't seen anything like incredible happening. I do see a concern in that scores seem to be going down a bit this year in 14-15, so I think that's worth looking into. Why are scores going up last year? Maybe this is a national trend.
What are you charting again? These are risk scores for...
This was just percent meeting. So if you look, 40%, 50%,
60%,
the last column.
The last column.
It's just percent meeting, and I put it up to 100 to show kind of where we are between 100 and it's by grade level. And it really just, it kind of shows we're all over, I guess, in my mind. I'm not seeing like that we're having a huge surge in anything or a huge decline. That was reading. Mike, could you do the next one?
And I guess it goes to Patrick's question about, you know, what is the norm for that?
Right. Well, and I think in my mind, too, do we care more about the NWEA norm? Because I would assume we're going to be above that. So are we more concerned about the norm?
100% meeting, though, because if they start lower, I think they're trying to normalize that because they're starting lower.
Well,
that's why if you go to comparative districts, which you asked during Karen's presentation, you actually want to look at absolute values.
Yeah, but if they start lower, well, there's a possible.
Stephanie, go ahead and finish this because this is a much longer conversation than we have time for tonight.
I'm trying to be quicker.
Go ahead.
This is just math. It shows this one I actually thought was interesting. First grade is like knocking it out of the park compared to all the other grades. But I mean, it kind of just goes up and down every year. And I just put along the bottom like a couple of things that I knew had happened, like in 11-12 is when the Common Core test came in, so with these expected scores to drop. 13-14 was when we made a lot of thinking changes, 14-15 PBL. So it just demonstrates kind of where we this is how I like to look at it, because it's hard for me to flip through 8 pages of charts to kind of see it all in one. How did all of our grades compare to see trending by year? What did we see trends in all the grades? I mean, obviously their percent meeting or their scores may vary, but did we see trends in going up or down? And then the next slide, thanks, Mike. This I did the cohorts because we had the cohort data. So this would be like each line is grade. Like, so the red line is eighth grade. That's this year's eighth graders. Where were they the past couple of years on there?
And this one again written, is the percent.
This is the percent, the last right. column mm-hmm. by cohort. And that's actually pretty, there's a couple. It's mm-hmm. weird. Eighth grade has some pretty big spikes and drops, but other than that, it's pretty even, not a lot of change year to year. And then the last one is the math by cohort. So I just wanted to share that. You know, this one is actually, there's a lot more significant change in math. But I don't know what accounts for those changes, those big dips.
Which
but that's our, like, grade K.
Your lunch line? I can't see that person.
Grade 2.
So, that's it. I'll share
that. If you can send those to us. What I'd really like is to then, to have this make any sense, is to bring this back to Karen and certainly Gail, who's our data specialist in the building, to see if this, you know, can be aligned to something. But I would add one other thing, and Karen's talked about this before, and we've talked in general about this, but it takes, as she mentioned, even with dual language, 5 to 7 years in terms of proficiency. Certainly when you make a change in a program, a change in Common Core, coming off of that, initiatives, instructional methodologies, things aren't going to shift in a year, right? It's got to embed itself. And that's some of what I heard you saying, which is really my question around when this goes back to the building and it comes to the administration, what's that, the planning time you built in, those kind of activities where teachers were saying we're coming together, we're doing the work of this because we're looking at this as a whole. And that's where it's not going to change 1 year to the next year. You're not going to see whatever the growth is going to be. But I appreciate the pullout, especially of that last column. So if we can get a copy of these, it'll be great. We get color copies too.
I'll add to that, Erica. Yep. You know, when you've got a child involved in that, you're going to be taking a deep look at it. That's the rest
absolutely.
Of
that's our that's
so
our concern.
Can, you can say it can be 7 or 8 years out, but that's speaking.
I'm using the example of dual language. I'm using that example. Then, in fact, it takes time for things to embed and for the work to be done. So, Karen, thank you so much.
Karen, I just want to thank you for presenting that, for bringing the data to the district. This is an incredibly comprehensive view of the data. I had a couple takeaways from the averages that you saw here tonight. When you compare the last two against those past 5 years, consistently we outperform it, except for one grade level. When we look at the year-to-year data, I think that's important when you're looking at programming. How is that programming compared to the previous years? You're able to see that. It's an interesting perspective there. Our cohort data continues. Our kids continue to grow each year. As Karen was able to demonstrate, it's like we continue to move. Are there some ups and downs throughout the data? Absolutely, but there were some ups and downs prior to 12-13 throughout our district. But that average is an interesting piece to be looking at, comparing the last 2 years to the previous 5 years, to see where we're at with programming, just a different way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Pleased with it. Karen, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, and to
more
Gail Minkus.
More work than we know.
So, yeah, incredible too. Amount of work. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. All right.
All right, can we take like a two-minute
bio break?
Bio break, run out,
10 o'clock. Thank you for being
principals,
here.
Run.
Feel free to leave.
Two principals, Karen, and everybody hang in with us. So just two minutes.
Yep. Okay, welcome back. It's 10:02. We took about a four-minute break. Under discussion items, we have the supplemental pay recommendations.
Lori will be talking to us about the elimination of one of the stipends and adding an additional 4 new stipends for 2015-16. Lori has already presented this information to Finance Committee on June 8th, but she'll give us a brief overview of supplemental pay.
So, as I mentioned at the Finance Committee, the supplemental pay is growth. There's
board representation on this committee are from Nelson Teachers Association and Teachers Association. So they make recommendations to changes in the supplemental pay structure and receipt of stipends on an annual basis. So we met in May and also in March, and the recommendations that we are making are contained in the report, including elimination of the elementary bus stipend at Forest Glen, addition of the assistant track coach position at Hadley, addition of the Winter Walkers Club at Churchill, adding stipends for early supervision at Hadley, and changing the pay rate for timer keepers to scorekeepers and crowd control at Hadley in order to respond to the change in the athletic conference. So at a high level, that's it. I'm trying to be cognizant of time. I would be happy to talk more depth about any of those if you'd like to have more information.
I think these were reviewed at finance, right? And I just want to highlight again that one of the things the committee does every year is look at what we're going to sunset, meaning activities that have not been active, haven't had the number of children, that we can save some money and take those aside and be able to put things into to programs that students are needing or principals are identifying, et cetera. I just want to highlight the early student supervision, and we had talked a little bit about that. This is being able to manage our drop-off times better. And so I know that I got an email from a parent that I had forwarded also to Erica and to Paul about that, like a 15-minute window, and that's exactly what this would be, that stipend for teachers to have them come in 15 minutes earlier so that Hadley opens early and there can be an easier drop-off and pick-up. So I think that'll be important to get out there.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Tentative budget. Later tonight, the board will be taking action to post a 2015-16 tentative budget for public display. This budget is vastly different than previous budgets that have been posted for display. This is the most comprehensive budget developed by D41. The budget is 62 pages long, and it breaks the budget down by each department and each school. It also outlines personnel associated with the CSO, schools, and the schools. During the May 26th Finance Committee of the Whole, the entire board gave administration feedback on the draft budget. Based on that feedback, administration has fine-tuned the budget to ensure that all personnel and costs associated with each department or within each school's budget is accounted for. It's been a huge undertaking by the administration, and I'm pleased with the outcome. I'd also like to thank the previous Finance Committee for helping to set the direction for this new budget. Discussion items. Okay.
There's,
I appreciate it.
Just one quick thing from Lend. I was at the Lend Council last week, and Bob already announced this, but they mentioned that where they're landing at this point downstate is that our general state aid will be at 92% prorated. Is that what you have too? Yep. And then in addition to that, and I don't know that our district will see these dollars, but they've negotiated a supplemental appropriation of $85 million, but it'll go to the schools that have the biggest state aid need. So it starts out with like East St. Louis and then goes down. We may get some of those dollars, but probably not. But at least they landed on what the GSA would do. So that was good to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right, consent agenda action items. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately?
Yes, I'd like the June 8th regular meeting minutes pulled.
Okay. Did you talk to Nancy about those already?
No, I didn't. Okay. Teams for excellent report. As I read this, the first part of it was okay, but the end of it, there was board discussion that occurred about this, so I'd like to have that as part of the record. Mr. Escalante brought it up in a question that he asked, and he asked specifically about whether they, felt the concerns from the teaching staff were able to be met. I disagreed with that. And
disagreed with his question or the answer?
I disagreed. I think it was a lead question. And I disagree.
So did you want to talk to Nancy about what you want to have included? And then we'll bring those minutes back on the 10th?
Sure.
Okay.
And just, board, know that these are not verbatim minutes.
Yeah.
These, we do have a a recording of these. These are not verbatim minutes. I mean, that's not what we're asking.
It's a board discussion. I mean, board discussion occurred. It's a valid point that occurred there. I mean, it's an important point. Mm-hmm. So.
No, that's fine. I just want to make
fine.
Sure that
I know
we're
that
not.
The, just a point of information, though. I know Nancy is. No, I know you're not. But just a point of information. Nancy had asked that if there is something to pull from the consent, especially the minutes, that takes, then we're two further weeks out. So that's it's a simple request. It's a fair request. But if you can get it to Nancy before the meeting, then those meetings can get posted, corrected, and we can have a corrected copy at the table. So I would just request, especially with minutes, that's an easy call to Nancy and to have that done in advance. All right, thank you. So we'll pull that out. Nancy, under approval of board meeting minutes, can I have just closed session on there then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. Anything else? All right, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which include item one, human resources, the personnel report, which we have an update at our table, employment recommendations. Item two, finance, facility, and operations, the treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue and expenditure summary report, the summary of bills and payroll, vandalism report, disposal of surplus property, our 2014-15 FOIA report, approval to renew property casualty and liability insurance, that's the CLIC, for the 2015-16 school year, school district payment order, which is from June 4th, 2015 through June 17th, 2015, and item three, other matters, which will now be amended to be the approval of board meeting minutes only for the June 8th, 2015 regular meeting closed session.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Elser?
Yes.
Mr. Boczynski?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right. Under superintendent recommendations, at its June 8, 2015 meeting, the board discussed the following recommendations. Item 1, Abraham Lincoln, additional cubby storage. The board discussed the purchase of an additional 94 storage cubbies for the Abraham Lincoln LMC area renovation project at a cost of $12,894 and installation cost of $6,000 for a total of $18,894. May I have a motion to accept the administration recommendation for the additional cubby storage at Abraham Lincoln as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion. I just want to point out that there was a request by the board at the last meeting, at that June 8th meeting, to see if they could be a different panel-style storage and if that would be a reduction in cost, you know, significant savings, and if it would also create more space in the hallway. And I know that we got our board report back with that information that it was, what, $1,000?
Correct.
Total cost difference was approximately $1,000 and no benefit of space gained. So I wanted to state that for the record that thank you, Bob, and I think it was Jack that went out and did that.
Did we we just got one bid for that? Was there a reason for one bid?
This is the contractor that we've been working with for a number of years, and this is that's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we could have possibly, had we gone with another, we could have seen some savings if we had gone with another.
Could have gone out again for public bid, would have pushed the date again further down the road.
Right. I think, again, the request was to try and do it between the June 8th meeting and find out if there was some significant savings, and so
evidently
we did have 2 weeks to get more than one bid.
We went out and got three bids on the original copies. We vetted those bids. We went to the wall bid. We went to that contractor for this price.
Would it have been easy enough to go to the other two to bid it?
Well, they were the higher bidders.
Maybe there's some economy of scale. It wouldn't have cost us anything. How much extra time within 2 weeks would it have taken to get another bid?
Well, there was cost associated with going out for this, so yeah, there was additional cost.
There was cost associated. What was
Kurt, just one thing, though, just from my experience, and Jack can correct me if I'm wrong, but the odds of going back to the two other guys who now know they're not the little bidder, unless you have a working relationship, which Jack may have, I can't speak to that, but usually they moved on to their next project, so they're not focused on one that they lost. They think they have a chance to win it, or they have a long-term relationship with the district or with their CM, and perhaps they will. But typically you don't see that. Like this, but in the spirit of what was requested, I think we got
May I return the button to the classroom?
Any other discussion?
I guess the only thing I'm going to explain on this, I don't necessarily have an issue with the bid itself, but I don't support moving forward with the construction because, as with the Lincoln LMC renovation, I don't think we should be doing construction in the school until the facilities task force figures out what we're doing long term. I think this should have been delayed a year with the LMC renovation. So.
Thank you.
I second that.
Thank you.
Just for the record, you guys voted no on that when we voted on that.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just explaining.
You're just reaffirming it. Okay.
All right. Roll call.
Mr. Aldrin?
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
No.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mr. Ellis?
No.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Next item up are the bid results for the Churchill Classroom Addition to replace the remaining portables. The board discussed the bid recommendations provided by FQC in the amount of $2,011,758 for the second floor classroom addition and site modification work at Churchill School. May I have a motion to accept the administration recommendation of the bid results for the Churchill Classroom Addition to replace remaining portables as presented?
Second.
Okay, discussion.
I'm still going to bring this issue up again. With Churchill being our immediate school, has the highest number of ELL, free and reduced lunch students, I feel that they should have the same amount of space as all the other elementary schools, if not more, to provide the appropriate education necessary. I think we have the money, we have the land. I don't know how quickly they could draw up plans, but... one question I would have is there space at Churchill to put more additions butted up against what the current additions are? I think the answer to that is yes. There's space there if you were to go back in the future and do that or now.
Well, I know you raised this at the June 8th meeting, and we talked about one of your questions was, well, I think what you said was something like, I don't want to change the trajectory of the project, right? We don't want to add time, et cetera. But in fact, what you're suggesting in your discussion is to change the motion, which is what's in front of us, which is the current bid recommendation. So I appreciate what you're saying, because I know actually, this is part of a larger conversation.
Yeah, well, and I'd like to make a motion that the board accept the bid recommendation provided by FQC in the amount of $2,011,750 for the second floor classroom addition and site modification work at Churchill School, while further evaluating adding two additional classrooms to this project to provide classroom space at Churchill that is equitable to the other elementary schools. I don't want to hold up the project. I'd like work to begin, but I'd like to see if we could quickly evaluate the feasibility of adding the two additional classrooms. So that's my motion.
So what your and it was seconded. So what your goal is to do is just evaluate.
Well, evaluate and do it. If it can be done.
So
that's different.
So that's
I'll change that. Okay.
I just want to understand.
Yeah.
We're going
to evaluate and move forward with adding
okay.
two additional classes.
That's very open.
Yeah. Second modification. Okay. Well, you get
I don't know. I will. Okay. I'll just say.
Okay. So a second motion has been presented.
Like this. If somebody's talking, let them finish. I can
fine-tune my wording. I would like me to fine-tune it. I took the beginning of the motion,
mm-hmm.
but I said, while
if the evaluation cost was taken extreme, $20 million, then you would do. You evaluated, so do. That's where I don't understand why you would put that in a motion. I mean, we're in discussion now. You made the motion and seconded, so it's in record. So, why would you just evaluate and do? You evaluate
and decide,
and then you decide. You don't say do, and because it just you could be.
Well, you're asking her to narrow the focus down on the motion. You're going to evaluate it. If it was $20 million, then the board would have the ability to vote on it. You're going to vote on that again.
So I'm moving forward
with that evaluation. So that evaluation is not over. The motion's not over.
The motion that's before us now. let me clarify this. The motion that's before us now that Stephanie has put forth is to take the first part of the motion that's that we are actually discussing and add to that the evaluation of adding two additional classrooms and then move forward with that evaluation.
I'll say, why don't I say pursuing?
Mm-hmm.
I think personally stopping your evaluation is fine. I mean, I think we're always evaluating. So I don't think that's a.
I'll say pursuing. I like pursuing.
What does that mean? So I understand when you're making the motion. What do you mean pursuing?
Adding two classrooms.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that what you're doing in the evaluation?
What she's saying, Joe, is that should this motion be accepted, which would change the current motion, that the board would agree to continue to move forward and then evaluate and then pursue adding two more classrooms, period. So that's the motion in place.
Didn't you just say evaluating to put two more classrooms on? I don't mean a nitpick, but when you make an open-ended motion like that...
I think pursue is a better word. I mean, look at it, figure out if we can do it.
Mm-hmm. So the concern for me on that would be that you're changing, in fact, what's happening at the building, and you're making a motion that sounds like it would, you know, could all be turned around in a month or two or whatever. In fact, what this would do is put a stop to what's currently being planned because it would have to reevaluate the entire project. Right.
Let me reach out to Jack to ask, you know, from the perspective of pursuing while continuing to move forward, is that even feasible?
If we bring some specificity to it, I think it's a conversation that we can have. I mean, I'm not going to play politician here. That's your business. Okay, I'm just going to speak real frankly. We're building four, and we decided to build four more. So it's really no different than continuing to build the second floor and then talking about building two more. So it's really no different than what we're already doing. If you want to talk about building two more, just tell us what you want us to look at. And it's not us, it would be the architect, because it takes design and engineering and permitting and going to the DuPage County Stormwater to see if we have enough stormwater detention. I don't know the answer to those questions. The utility, engineering, and design things have got to be figured out, and then appearance and permitting and approvals. But
would it delay
the
this
special question is, well,
would it delay the four that they're voting on tonight?
Not if the motion is to continue with these four and build these four while pursuing the analysis of what it would take to build two more. Because that's essentially what we just did. We got the approval to build the first four, and then somewhere during that time frame, we got the approval to build the second floor.
To remove the other portables.
Right, which is what is being voted on tonight. So we were building four when we got the approval to build the second floor while we're going through that process. Mm-hmm. So it's really no different, but what goes in those next two classrooms is really important, mm-hmm. which is, to me, the threshold question. What kind of classrooms? Are they standard, you know, nothing special classrooms, or are they kindergarten classrooms? That's a big question, mm-hmm. because if they're kindergarten classrooms, they're bigger, they take up more square footage, it changes the setbacks, you have to have plumbing to them, you have to have sanitary sewer to them, it changes all the engineering. So evaluating, pursuing, whatever the words are that you choose, to me it's a lot more important than what kind of classrooms are there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jack. So we have a motion before us that Stephanie's placed to use the first part of this motion and then to pursue the possibility of adding two additional classrooms onto the four we already have. Any other discussion?
Is there a rough idea of what the cost would be to pursue that? I mean, that does seem a little... open-ended. I mean, if I knew it was going to cost us $10,000 to make that determination.
I think my concern. I appreciate your motion. I'm not surprised that this is your motion, because I know that this is an interest of yours, Stephanie, as well as Kurt's. What we're talking about here, though, is going to actually come up later in the agenda, which is around the conversation on community engagement. What is it that these buildings are meant to look like? What is it that the community wants? So I'm not in favor of amending the motion. I think my position will be to move forward with the motion that we have in front of us. That conversation is going to happen, though. It's going to happen in the context of a larger community engagement.
And that's why we are pursuing it. We are evaluating. So we're already doing what you're asking.
But I want this done. I want this to be completed by next August. So this...
We've been told last time it would be a four month delay, and we've already known, I mean Bob has a great relationship. I don't think that's correct. And Bob has a good relationship with the village. He's built a great relationship with them. They've been able to streamline a lot of things. We've seen that. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's a testament to him and his ability to do that. So I don't see that as a huge problem. Do you decide to move if you need more kindergarten classrooms? Here's what I know: we had 10 years ago at or above four buildings that were over 600 kids. When we looked at this last data that we just got, Churchill is well over 600, approaching 700. The rest of the buildings are under 600. In fact, Lincoln is now at 525, which is the lowest number I've seen in Lincoln School in a number of years. So clearly the stressor is Churchill to get them some, you know, and they've got many issues that we've talked about, to get them the needed help in a quick fashion that we can do. We have the money. It just seems to make sense to me to go ahead and do that and call it a day as far as at least getting them so that they're not so stressed for space.
Joe, and then who else has not spoken, and then we'll move forward.
But it's important that the record gets corrected, because yeah. Kurt stated it only takes 4 months. And I think the fine...
Well, there's a four-month delay, is what I said. No, that's what we were told.
Joe, go ahead.
But I don't think that's... You're distorting... Well, I'll ask Jack for his expertise, because I think... Don't rely on mine. Let's rely on who is hired here and who is an expert. But you're distorting what was said in that meeting to get to where you can then get to an August date. So, Jack, do you have an opinion on it? Because I can give mine, but I don't think...
Thanks, Joe.
I understand what happens when you delay...
That was what we were told. I can only...
Well, I don't know who told you that, but it wasn't me. Yeah. Joe talked about schedule and put months out there, and I don't even know what numbers of months that he used. But all I've said with regard to schedule is don't forget about permitting, village approvals, appearance committees. You got to factor that into your schedule. That was my contribution to talk about schedule.
Mm-hmm. Where do you believe the timeline would land if they added the 2, the 4?
Well, I don't know. You've got to. The first question is the hardest question. What classrooms are you going to build? If you can tell me when you're going to give us that answer, then I can give you some kind of projection as to when those two classrooms can come online. Mm-hmm.
You have to agree on design. You then have to design it. Then you have to go through the approval process, which Jack described very eloquently last meeting. But that pushes everything back, because now you have to go through our normal bid process.
The full design.
The full
then
design.
The bid process. Then the board award process.
Where are you going to end up? I'll give you my opinion now. Where are you going to end up? You're going to either decide to pay escalation of costs due to winter construction, or you're going to wait, maybe get some site work done this fall, and then wait through the construction. You can deliver them in January of 2017.
Or you can build two and go back in a couple of years and build two more and have the extra cost of not being back.
Well, Kurt, I think what we're saying here, what it sounds like we're saying here is we don't have a decision. And that's exactly the point of moving forward and not jeopardizing these four classrooms. There's portables on a parking lot that I know that Scott Klespitz is thrilled to be getting rid of. And that's what is the original motion. And your requests, your questions, I think are valid. But what it proves, what it says to me in terms of this conversation is, this is a larger conversation. It's not just about throwing two rooms on like a Lego house. This is a deeper, broader conversation. So anyone who hasn't spoken yet, do you have a comment? And then we'll...
I do. And that's that I'm prepared to vote on the first motion that we had in front of us tonight because I don't want to slow down this project. I think that the changing the motion could maybe be a completely separate motion if we want to do that. But I'm reluctant, given the time and the urgency to do this, to wing this at this table tonight mm-hmm. and try to word a motion... But to try to build, excuse me?
But we've worded the motion in a second, so you're going to have to
okay, so that's what I said. So I'm letting you know ahead of time. I'm going to vote no on that, and it's not because I don't like the idea. It's because I don't want to mess with what we've got in front of us now. I think you bring up a really good idea, and it should be talked about, and I think that's what the Facilities Committee is for. Mm-hmm. Because while we say, well, we could do this and put these at Churchill, the other thing is there's 700 kids at Churchill. And I'm not so sure I buy into the fact that that's the right answer in the first place. So that's what the Facilities Committee should do. So I think I'd like to vote on what's in front of us right now. And then if we want to do a second motion, that's fine, but I don't want to change the first motion. So if we have to change the first motion, I'm going to have to vote.
No, we have a second motion in front of us, okay. And we'll need to take a roll call vote on that since okay. it's been seconded. Any other discussion?
My only comment is I'm not going to go into this, but let's just be clear when we vote what we're voting for. Mm-hmm. We don't need another unraveling in August of what we did and what we did not do. So okay.
Thank you.
For administrative sake, we'd be clear on what we're voting for, and it's there's two motions on here, but the original is still outstanding.
Correct. So the motion right. that we're voting on, because there was a second, we had discussion, so thank you for that, is the second motion that was an amended motion of the first. Is that correct, Nancy?
Yep.
Okay.
Kind of a clarifying question.
Yes.
If Stephanie's motion is voted down.
Correct. We go back to the first motion.
We go back, but you can go back and make another motion.
No. We have a second. We have second motion in front of us, and that is to amend the first motion to discuss pursuing two more classrooms right now. Okay, that's the motion we're going to vote on right now. If that motion is defeated, then we go back to the original motion, which is in front of us, which is the additional classroom space, Churchill classroom addition, the bid results for these four classrooms. That's the original motion. We go back to that.
And that has already been seconded. The
Correct.
Original motion.
Correct.
Unless
yes.
somebody goes and amends another motion.
Right.
Okay.
Correct. Okay. So we're voting on the amended motion, Nancy.
Roll call. I just want to make sure I'm
yes.
clear on what it is.
Yes.
The original motion with adding the evaluation of pursuing the possibility of adding two classrooms on the four we have currently under consideration.
Correct. Thank you. Okay, good listen. Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Bochinski.
No.
Mr. Buchholz.
Yes.
Mrs. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Elger.
No.
Mr. Ellis.
No.
I'm sorry?
No.
Mr. Escalante.
No.
Mrs. Nelson.
No. Okay, we have before us an original motion. Let me read that again. May I have a motion to accept the administration recommendation of the bid results for the Churchill Classroom Edition to replace remaining portables as presented? That's the motion. It's been seconded. You have that down, Nancy?
John.
Okay. And we've had discussion. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Clark.
No.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz.
No.
Mr. Elger.
Yes.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Bochinski.
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Okay, item 3 is the 2015-2016 copier paper bid results and purchase approval. The board discussed the copier paper bid from Unisource in the amount of $26.70 per case. Based on the delivery of 1,824 cases spread out over 12 months, the total cost will be $48,700.80 effective for the 2015-16 fiscal year. May I have a motion to accept the administration recommendation for the 2015-16 copier paper bid results and purchase approval as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? It's by paper. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Bochynski?
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you. Last item, the 2015-16 tentative budget and budget display. Earlier in the meeting, the board discussed the 2015-16 tentative budget, which will be presented to be approved in August following a public hearing. May I have a motion to accept the administration to approve the resolution notifying the public of the public hearing on the 2015-16 tentative budget preceding the August 10th, 2015 board meeting and the placement of the tentative budget on public display?
Motion. Second.
Okay, any discussion? I know every year we just clarify for the record and also as we're streaming where the budget is posted publicly. Can you just do that again, Bob?
Where is it?
Yeah.
Under, go to the District 41 website under finances, and we'll have the tentative. There's several reports that are posted. This would be one.
Right, and then is it also published publicly?
That is the public.
That's, it's to, just on our website. Mm-hmm. I want to clarify that because that was a question that came out just to get put in the newspaper or whatever, and it's on our website. Mm-hmm. We just, I know that.
And in our buildings.
And in the buildings, right. Library has a copy. Right. Okay, good. Thank you.
I think that's important because I think that's what you're getting at. It's
yeah,
on the
it was
web,
confusing
and there
last
are paper
year.
Copies that are available
yes,
at the different buildings in the district and at the library.
Good. Thank you, Bob. Anything else? Roll call.
Mr. Escalante.
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz.
Yes.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
Mrs. Clark.
Yes.
Mr. Elder.
Yes.
Mr. Bochynski.
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson.
Yes. Thank you. Superintendent reports.
Try to go through these quickly. We had a Rotary donation. The district received a donation from the Glen Ellen Rotary Club in the amount of $1,500. I want to publicly thank the Glen Ellen Rotary. That's been an annual donation for us. Just so thank you. I know, Kirk, you sit on the Rotary currently, so appreciate it. Triple I conference is November 20th through the 22nd. This is attended by thousands of leaders throughout Illinois, focused in on, you know, in association with the school administrators and the Illinois Association of School Business Officials and the Illinois Association of School Boards. It's an amazing opportunity to grow as school board members and administrators. So continue to look forward to that conference.
Can I make
up,
one
please.
Quick comment about that? I know we talked about this last year. You have the opportunity to attend the entire conference or do a one-day pass, and I'd really encourage as we look at our calendars and look at, because the agenda's posted, we'll, if you only want to do the Saturday, then let's do that. It's a more appropriate use of our registration dollars, certainly, if you can't make it back for Sunday, so be conscious of that. I know that last year we covered our own meals. The board's budget does allow for the registration payment. If there's a pre-conference on that Friday that you want to do, mm-hmm. please check into that. Nancy needs to get that information out as well. But do the one-day pass if you know that's what you can attend.
Nancy, what's the most important thing you need to know and by when?
If you want to go, mm-hmm. and if you need housing for any time, we'll make the arrangements in if you need us to make them in one room versus if that's what the board decides, then we'll go ahead and do that.
Okay.
They have to go in together.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So to, you know, it's a best opportunity I'd like to do it tomorrow. It's already been open a week, so typically we do it right away.
Okay. So is there an early bird type of fee for the conference or no? When's the conference?
Well, the conference, we don't incur additional fees until October for the conference.
So if you want to go to the conference, you just need to let you know by October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we need to secure housing if that's what board members want.
If people
want
to do an overnight.
So,
right.
If you can.
But to be clear, for the conference, it's October. So I don't
correct.
For the registration.
No.
Work,
look at you. Look at your
schedule. If you're not looking at housing, Joe, there's no rush.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So please let Nancy know by tomorrow if you're going to need housing so we can register the group. Okay, community engagement update. In response to the board discussion about community engagement on June 8th, which I appreciate the conversation. Everybody put their piece on the table where they're at. And as we listened to it, as Erica and I listened to it and other cabinet members, it was clear we were across the board, but one of the things that continued to come across is sticking point around costs associated with UNICOM itself for some board members. So we're going to be taking on that charge internally from Erica, myself. We'll be supporting the process. We will outline a clear charge with the board direction, really trying to, as I met with a community member, really try to avoid scope creep, in her words, and I think it was a good use of language. So we're ensuring that. We need to identify the community leaders to still serve as co-chairs, develop structures that will allow for dialogue to occur, and as Eric and I serve as support and resources for the task force to ensure, I think those charge really needs to look at reviewing the historical facilities documentation and the current facilities needs, which we have, evaluate the current recommendations for viability and financial implications, and a report to the board, opportunities and challenges of the facilities plan. This is one of those considerations that we discussed was we can continue having this discussion up here, but that would lead us into August because I did not feel like we had any consensus anywhere from that night. So moving forward, trying to move this forward. So Eric and I would be taking the summer, July, to be putting together that library, those resources that are available for the community. We have 20 some odd community members who've already signed up to say, yeah, I want to participate. 24?
Some more, and several maybe.
Okay. So really owning this process internally, I've also made a call to an individual who may want to help us facilitate that conversation. So again, really want to ensure that that this task force owns this process, and we really hand the keys to them. We're there as that support, the process, ensuring that the process is done in helping the community members with the resources that they need. I feel like at this point in time, this is the best move for our district, considering the conversation that we had up here. So that we're going to be owning that internally.
So is the scope of what the task force will be doing, has that been determined, or is that something you guys are going to...
That's what we will bring back forward to you in the coming weeks, so we can hear some feedback. So when we get back in August, we're going to define it clearly. But I think, as I outlined, really review that historical facilities documentation back from 2001, and the current facility needs, evaluate the current recommendations of viability and financial implications, and then create a report to the board, the opportunities and challenges of the facilities plan that, as that task force views them. Mm-hmm. So that's where we sit with it today.
I appreciate that, Paul. I think it's, I think we did have agreement out of everything that we discussed that it's really important that the community understand, as it's done internally, that that the concern and making sure that this is not a district process, it's a task force process. And so as it's pulled internally and you create the structure, it's going to be important for me to listen to what we heard that Wednesday night at Churchill in that initial task force meeting, which was not to replicate, you know, committees mm-hmm. of the past. And so we have to be very careful about that and make sure that if we can get another facilitator or that there are, you know, that's a really big, important part of the conversation. It's not a district-driven or board-driven. It's really that team. So I appreciate you taking this on. It's extra work, as we talked about, and thank you.
I'm wondering if it would be, I think it's a good move to go down this road to try to restore trust and engage the community, mm-hmm. have some discussion. I'm wondering if it would be worth to be helpful to have a special meeting in July with the board, kind of as a brainstorming to help, since the board knows a lot of history and information that might be needed, to provide the community a brainstorming, like this is the type of stuff you should be putting together that would be helpful. I don't know if kind of like a facilities planning meeting, I guess, but not really.
Might be more efficient than you know, because it sounds like you're going to try and reach out for that information, but if we're trying to do it piecemeal, you know, you're getting information from mm-hmm. me and it's coming in from Joe. Maybe it's...
Well, there's a lot of in-house, I mean, there's a lot of district information that's still this legacy information, like, you know, you served on that initial task force and then it went through. I hear what you're saying. I think what that would turn into is a facilities discussion, and I'm wary of the board meeting and having a conversation around facilities and not look like we're driving a process. So I'd be concerned about that. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I think there's a lot of value in our comment, but Erica's a professional communications person. Maybe you can let us know. If you feel like that's going to be valuable and it's a one-hour meeting to do a data collect, then that would make some sense, but I'm concerned of setting up a meeting that sounds like we're talking about it. I don't know.
More important to me would be the scope.
Mm-hmm.
The data collection.
The scope of the task force.
Yes. I mean, that, if we can get a leg up on, I think is a well-spent dollar. I think the data collection, that can be, and I agree, piecemealing is troublesome, but if you guys have your list together, we can give you feedback on that. But is there something missing? Is there something more to it?
Yeah.
But I brought this up at the last meeting with Unicon scope when I compared that to Millennium scope. And you know, Patrick asked me the question. I had an issue with Unicon scope, along with other issues, but mm-hmm. I'm upset on that topic. But the scope, we should define and agree on.
So let us craft the scope. Let us get it to you, and then see where that leads us. Does that lead us to another meeting in July? It may not.
It may be.
Let's try that first.
We feed you back emails, and
then I'll shoot all those to the full board. So let's try that, and if that doesn't work, if we feel like we need an hour, we'll try to find something in July that works for everybody. Does that work?
Yeah, that's fine. You just have to.
I'm confused on this, though. So the purpose of your work is to define the structure of a community engagement?
The first work is to define the charge.
The charge of what?
The charge of the task force.
Okay.
To really define that. What Eric and I will be working on will be that defining that process, that full process that we're going to be engaged in now, that we own it and not an outside company. So we'll be working on those dually.
Right.
You're taking the outside company off the table.
Yes, based off of the conversation I had with, as we sat in here that night.
There was not consensus.
There was no consensus.
So I don't know why you can take it off.
I don't know if there's consensus. I mean, my notes on this was there wasn't consensus for anything.
That's what I mean.
So if there's no consensus for anything, you're moving forward as if there's consensus. But because my position was, and I guess I don't need to say anything else.
Yeah.
Well, there's no consensus. Well, I think what you're trying to do is move things forward. We would sit here for the next 4 months and talk about the same stuff, and nobody's going
to
buy it.
As long as you're willing to pursue analyzing the ability to bring a facilitator in at the right moment if the board deems it appropriate.
I'm okay with that. If
open-ended for
me. I want to use the words that were most carefully
crafted.
Crafted before.
All right.
Well, we don't.
I feel like
we.
I don't need a motion. I don't need a motion. So this is where we're. This is the direction we're heading at this moment.
I'd like to thank you because I was involved in that first meeting as well as Erica and Stephanie, and I think
at Churchill.
Churchill, and I think we're sticking with fidelity of that and what was requested, and this is the direction the community wanted us to go.
All right. The next piece, as I've heard from different board members over time, recently and in the past, I am going to be requesting an RFQ, a request for qualifications for an architect of record for District 41. So I've heard from a number of different board members at different points in time questions about just how long have we had FGM? Would it be worth going out and reviewing
yes.
the qualifications of other architect firms?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that on a fairly consistent basis from this board and from the former board. So I feel like I've had enough conversations individually that I feel like I have the that I'm in the right place of asking for that RFQ. And what the RFQ will do is it puts a lot of work on Bob's shoulders for the next month and a half, putting pieces in place. We will come together with a timeline what this will occur. What it would look like is for the 16-17 year that would be in play for, so we can continue moving down that road with FGM. This does not exclude FGM. This is an open process for any architect who wants to come in who would like to engage in the process with us.
Well, don't we have a defined process?
Oh, very much so. There's a very clear process that's set up. A lot of school code, a lot of legal aspects to it that we will follow. And one of those is price is not a part of the decision making. Quite honestly, the price will not be a part of the RFQ. That you will not be making a decision on cost. You will be making a decision on a fit for your district based off of whatever the rubric looks like. So, yes, there is a very defined process that we follow that has been used before and others will be also, I'll leave it there.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Anything else that I can, looking ahead for 2015-16 school year, We had a great retreat with our ad team, with principals, APs. Really appreciated the conversation, talking about instruction, talking about data, talking about leadership. The other aspect that we talked about, and had Deputy Chief Bill Homer in the room with us to talk about emergency planning. Vital and incredibly important conversation that Deputy Chief Bill Homer. Our relationship with him and the police department continues to expand and grow. He was a vital component of that conversation and really pushed the thinking. So I appreciate the Glen Allen Police Department and Deputy Chief Homer. But the retreat was a fantastic opportunity for us to continue moving our district forward. Karen, teachers, coaches are busy with curriculum work already and early learning, math, and literacy. Appreciate that. School offices, staff have been busy closing out the school year and getting ready to begin their work for next year. We're working on logistics of administering a follow-up school perception survey and a staff and culture and climate survey. We will have both in the fall. Lori and I are working on the logistics of when to give each one so we're not right on top of each other with both. All right, I think that's enough.
For the school perception survey, are we looking at modifying or additional?
Yes, and that's what I heard from the board. And we did hear from Bill Foster. Thank you. I was like, where's that name? He did say we can add. He would keep the survey as in its entirety, how it was, but then add questions at the end. He said that will allow for the validity of the first set of questions to remain intact, and then he would add additional questions at the bottom.
Are you looking at what questions
ahead
now?
We're going to start that conversation. We've had a few things up in the air lately. But that is our next bit of work, is to really get into those questions of saying, what is it we're looking at? I heard we'll go back to that tape of that evening. We'll listen again to some of those pieces. Mm-hmm. We'll be presenting that work in the coming weeks. But, yeah.
And if the cost is over $10,000,
we will bring that back to you.
Bring it down. If it's under $10,000, then it's within your.
Yeah. Okay. It does take a lot of time working those questions. As Julie and I experienced a year and a half ago, it takes a lot of time to do those pieces. But if we keep it to a certain set, then I think we can probably do it under that $10,000 frame. All right.
Okay.
I'm done.
Great. Board reports. Any board reports? I just want to mention Churchill started their bookmobile. This is, I think, the third year they're doing it. And I happened to drive by the other day and stopped over, and there were a couple parents and a number of students making bookmarks and taking books. This is a great opportunity for kids that can't get to the library easily, although the Glen Allen Library this year has the library card as they've had, but also are providing lunch. So I know that there are some families taking advantage of that as well, so that's good. And also congratulations and thanks to the Village of Glen Ellyn and also the Glen Ellyn Park District. On Saturday was the Monarch Butterfly activity, both at Mary Knoll and at the Civic Center. I know that Karen went over to Mary Knoll, was it? And then also went over to see Heidi Han and her team at the community garden. So we had a lot of D41 students out and about over the weekend, which was great. Okay. Upcoming meetings. August 10th, 2015, we'll have a public hearing for the 2015-16 budget and a regular board meeting. We'll start that at 7:15 with the public hearing. He'll be here at Central Services. August 20th, there's a special workshop board meeting at 6 p.m. here at Central Services. That's a board workshop retreat with our IASB field service director for our region. And then on August 24th, again, 2015, a regular board meeting at 7:30, Central Services office.
Erica, can I? That's the board retreat as item B.
Correct, yeah.
I don't know, that's a closed session?
Yes, because we're in closed session with our IASB field service director to do a board retreat. It's a, like a self-evaluation kind of kickoff meeting.
So what section do we go under for? That.
Under closed session, you have the ability to go into closed session as a board when you work with a representative of the Illinois Association of School Boards, your field service director. Mm-hmm. So we take advantage of that to come in and do a retreat time with them.
And it's under what section?
I'd have to look at the list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
I don't remember which number.
Yeah, I don't know the number, but yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's the very last one. There you go. All right. Thank you for clarification. All right. Where am I? Other matters. Administrator.
What is that date? I'm sorry.
August 20th. Yeah. With that. Yeah. Okay. Administrator contracts, TRS contributions. At the June 8th Board of Education meeting, I noted that the board would have a discussion about TRS, which is Teacher Retirement Service payments, administrator contracts relative to budget and hiring. There was some confusion, my fault, around when we would start that. I was thinking that it would be closer to as contracts are coming up, but the board had decided as we listened to closed session tape that we would begin that conversation. So the Finance Committee is going to add this to their agenda. Joe's going to provide a tentative timeline or a set of points tonight. And then if there's some quick comment, I want to keep in mind the time. And, of course, this is going to come back in August, and this will be a long-term conversation for the board. So, Jill?
Yeah, our goal, our plan is to start having a public discussion, as I said, the August 10th Finance Committee meeting. So, right now, my next goal is to meet with Paul and Lori in July to sit down to get a good understanding of TRS from top to bottom, educate myself fully, put a plan together so that we can bring that forward at the August 10th, but to make that our start for public. That's our next public meeting. Obviously, if we have one in July, it'll be smaller in scope, so we'll include this, but to open that up for public discussion on August 10th.
And are you going to, is that at Finance Committee that night as well?
That's where we'll start. I'm not going to bring it to board. The goal, at least what I'm looking at, is to vet it a little more at Finance, maybe one or two meetings.
Yeah, no, I think that makes
sense. And then bring it to the board, maybe end of September, beginning of October.
Yeah. I'm on Finance Committee. I'm going to disagree. I think it should just come to the board. It's a pretty big issue, and I think probably before it gets vetted down, I think it should be, I think the entire board should be weighing in on it.
One thing we like to do, and we've done this, and I appreciate your opinion, maybe we can talk about it a little more, because we can talk two board members together on it, and I'm willing to take any insight you have on it. I think you're more versed in it than I am, so I appreciate that if you have a little time. But what we've done in the past, and we've been successful at the Finance Committee, is just really brainstorming other people come to that meeting, and we can spend longer on it instead of dragging meetings out if we don't have a lot of agenda items at Finance. And we can keep it going one or two or three meetings long, and at least we can bring that scope and determine what we want to, and I would love to be part of that conversation, to the board. And then if some of the same things get discussed, that's okay. But at least there's been some, hopefully, intelligent conversation with and the good news is the public can come to that. I know they can't speak at it, but they can come to it and
and at least see where we're going on it, and they can write an email and try to redirect us if they feel we're going the wrong way. It's kind of a prep, you know, kind of a practice, if you will.
Well, and that was one of my concerns, is they can't speak yet, because, yeah, you know, we can't. Again, we're back to the, you know, I guess I'll disagree with some of my board counterparts. I'm not sure. I mean, emailing is one form of communication, but when that occurs, it's one person seeing what one other person maybe thought. If they don't choose to send it to everybody, if they, you know, at a board meeting, somebody can speak to the discussion that occurred maybe the meeting before. So
at the end of the day, and I understand what you're saying. At the end of the day, I agree with those points on the email or, you know, private conversation or what have you. At the end of the day, though, we're getting it to the board. We're not going to leave it, you know, like we're in at the House of Representatives and it gets stuck in the Ways and Means Committee for 7 years. That's not the goal, nor does it have to happen, because you bring things up as other matters all the time. But I think just a way to do it in maybe professional, organized way to get it going, the discussion going. And get it out in public, because we do have 3 members on it, so it's a public meeting. I think it's a
can all board members sit in and weigh in on the
discussion?
Sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and I think it's not so much, Joe, you used the term vet it down. It's less, it's more for me, like we have these standing committees of the board. So that their focus is really on either policy, like Dean and Stephanie sit on, or finance. And so it's less about vetting it down and more about creating structure so that as you bring it to the board, you know, we have, here's the data, here's what we've gone through, what are your questions? Because then the board opens up another lens to that. So it's not really dumbing it down or vetting it down. It's really creating structure for us. Yeah.
In my mind, I mean, I guess, you know, if it's at finance, I'm as long as I can come and sit and talk about it. Mm-hmm. But I guess I don't see it as a finance committee. And in my mind, you're in finance committee. You're kind of talking about, you know, the capital improvement projects and our different bids that we get on things and talking about those. This is kind of a philosophy: is how is our district going to operate, and is this something we're going to make a change to, which could be mm-hmm. significant. And I don't know that's. I feel like the whole board should be involved in that decision.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, no one's making a decision with the findings.
It'll come as a narrowed scope where you used the term that the way you viewed it, and it's probably true that you used the term vetted, and then it comes as a narrow scope, I guess. You know, and it is true, I guess, that the board member could come, but I don't know.
If we can get a topic on the agenda to get stuff either every meeting, then I think that's a good goal.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I think
you can
tell your husband. I think it's more about structure. We have a finance committee, and to your point, it's philosophical, but the beginning part of that is it's there's a financial impact, there's hiring issues. I mean, there's all these other pieces, and I think it's important for the board to use its committees, and because it's 3 persons and it's open, we can come. So I'd like for finance to be able to do that structuring. And bring us the, you know, the observations you have so we can add on to those. Well, so that'll start August 10th.
And when we did that with facilities, you'd find many times there'd be 6 or 7 board members at a finance committee meeting.
Yeah.
So what it does is it gives us that extra hour in the beginning, extra half hour to start talking.
If we do find that it is important for the entire board, we can certainly make a finance committee of the whole.
Right.
So we certainly have that option.
Okay. Any other board members? Board matters. Okay.
I had one more. Sorry. That I wanted to bring up. It was the renovation, the bathroom renovation at Ben Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it looks like we maybe are having a change with that based on the cost coming back higher than initially approved by the board or estimated or approved by the board. And in thinking about that a little bit, I guess in my mind, the proposal now is to go with a fix that costs less money and then to reevaluate it next year. But in my mind, you know, the fix that was recommended by the team is what's necessary. You know, in my mind, I think they recommended what was necessary and what was economically proven. I don't think they probably went above and beyond crazy what they needed. Unfortunately, the costs are high because of our collapsed timeline for everything. But I just hate to spend a small amount of money now to make a little fix that maybe that isn't necessarily what's appropriate or what meets the needs for the classroom, for the teacher, you know, the teacher and the kids involved, none of them were, you know, none of them have had any bearing of the timeline or the cost. And I just think as a school district, I think if that's what's needed and that's what was determined is needed, I would rather just spend a little bit more money, even though it's at a premium, than spend a little money now and cause problems for that school, that class, that teacher, and come in and, I mean, in the end, how much money are we going to save?
It may cost us more money.
It may end up may costing us more. I guess I'm just...
What did Michelle find, to Stephanie's point, in terms of the, you know, the teachers and the this kind of interim decision?
So within this classroom, there are two sets of restrooms. One, the one that we were considering to do the renovation, think of it as a more of a Jack and Jill bathroom that would connect to the two classrooms. Mm-hmm. The one over here had a doorway, and the one on the other side had a doorway to it. There was also a within that, again, lack of a better term right now, a Jack and Jill restroom. There were two toilets within that one. There was the other restroom, which does not have the Jack and Jill connection to it. It has one restroom within it. There we were going to be, again, none of these are temporary. This would stay and maintain from here on out. We would put up a wall, which would allow for, hard part here is I can't be talking too much about the types of...
For confidentiality,
because we're talking about a very small number of students, and it would start to identify that child. But those needs would be met within that classroom, within that one restroom. Long term, would we still want to do exactly what you said? Absolutely. But the cost just became, it was an additional $20,000 to do that one restroom. From what we understand from Jack and others, if we get into a timeline around next January, we're going out for bids. That way they could start on day one, that students and staff aren't there, that we would see a reduction in cost fairly significantly, somewhere in that $20,000 to $30,000 range.
For the total?
For the total cost.
So
because
at the end of the day, you would approve two restaurants for less money.
I believe so. That's what we're hearing. Because, again, the restroom that has a single toilet in it, that would stay. We're not ripping anything out. That all maintains there with some of the added features that are needed. We would then go back in and next summer be able to do that that second restroom. I appreciate what you're saying. I do. But when I saw those costs, I really struggled with it. I even brought it up at board president's meetings.
Right,
and, oh, my goodness.
It was a total departure. So
it was. It was.
It was $20,000 over the original cost.
I was shocked. I was shocked about it. But really hearing from Jack and others around the timeline, and, again, I want to talk about the timeline. That was not a lack of planning on the administration's part. That was really about IEPs and making sure that we meet with each student, and that's required. We needed to have that done. The last one was in late April. So from there, we really started our timeline. We brought to the board in May. That first meeting where Karen and Michelle presented it, brought data to you the next meeting, and then we needed to wait for the bids, and we received those bids last Tuesday. Tuesday or something along those lines. My brain is...
So we're basically modifying a different bathroom.
Yeah.
That needs less work.
That needs less work.
Changing the classroom, maybe modifying a different...
So a wall would go up that you... That they really... Yeah, I mean, it's not something that they use as a classroom facility right now. It just leads into the restroom door. I mean, you literally walk into a kind of a an alcove, and then you walk into the... Then you open the door into the toilet. And then go in. So from that alcove, we would have a wall that would go across within it. Mm-hmm. Some of the facility needs that we'd need to support students would be within that.
I'm assuming Michelle wouldn't have signed off on this with you if she didn't feel it was the right thing.
Karen, Dave, once Dave brought me the numbers, I literally turned to Dave and said, you need to go meet with Karen and Michelle and talk this thing through. Because if it was a 100% need, I'd be sitting here today telling you, we need to spend the $70,000. But Karen, Michelle, their expertise in ensuring that that piece was done well. I feel good about it. I don't feel good that we're not having the exact bathroom we would want, but it's a good piece for now. And then next year, I believe we'll come in at a much lower cost and still get, as Joe said, two restrooms, I believe, for less than the total cost that they were presenting to us last week. But thank you. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, and that was concerning again. Because it didn't come across in the memo that way necessarily. We were thinking, are we spending money now and then going to spend this again next
week? Rip it out.
Yeah. And then back and send
it
out. Okay. Makes sense.
Thank you.
Okay, adjourn to closed session. The board is determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. I have a motion to adjourn to closed session.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Wojcinski?
Oh, yes.
Mrs. Clark?
No.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. The board will not be taking action following closed session. Okay, back in open session. May I have a motion to close the June 22nd Board of Education meeting?
I'll make a motion to close the June 22nd.
Okay, Drew, I'm putting you down.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Drive safely.